James O'Brien's the other side of the news here on LBC. I'm with you Monday morning from 7. Monday morning, another weekend gone. Monday morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and tempting though it is to dedicate some time this morning to all the Tories and their friendly client journalists who spent years cheering on and chuckling at a Prime Minister who repeatedly and provenly lied to the House of Commons, suddenly discovering some form of conscience regarding a Prime Minister who, as yet, has not. There are more important things unfolding, or you could, of course, be forgiven for not noticing that from some of the media coverage this morning. I refer, of course, to the war that everybody was in favour of just 8, 9, 10 short days ago, but many people are now desperate to completely ignore. We won't. We can't. That's what decency demands. But one question now rises head and shoulders above all others.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the United States has permitted the temporary sale of Russian oil to stabilise global energy markets as the war in the Middle East continues. Iran has continued to target ships in the Gulf and the Strait of Hormuz remains effectively closed. The Trump administration has suggested that the US Navy could be used to protect oil tankers in the Strait. Energy Minister Michael Shanks was asked on LBC this morning whether the UK could support any potential operation.
This is the most disruptive we've ever seen to oil across the world in our history, and so we've got to do everything we possibly can. Part of that might be militarily, and I'm not going to be drawn on operational matters, but it's also in how we de-escalate this entire situation, and that's why the Prime Minister is focused with allies around the world, including the United States, to work out what actions we can take to de-escalate this whole situation so that we can try and bring the conflict an end, but also, of course, bring markets back to stability.
Separately, the Chancellor will meet fuel and energy bosses later to discuss soaring oil prices. Rachel Reeves says she won't tolerate companies exploiting uncertainty in the Middle East to make excess profits. US defence officials say four crew members have died after an American military refueling plane crashed in western Iraq. US Central Command says it wasn't the result of hostile or friendly fire. It's understood six people were on board, with rescue efforts continuing. Investigations into how it happened are underway. Three Metropolitan Police officers are being investigated over an alleged assault on a black teenager in North London. The 16-year-old, who's not been charged with any offences, suffered a broken knee when he was tackled in Tottenham last April. The watchdog has told LBC it's looking at whether race was a factor in his treatment. London's Mayor Sir Sadiq Khan has told us that it's being taken seriously.
I'm sure the police watchdog will be looking into this particular matter because it's really important. Not only is a stop and search done properly, but the police have confidence to use it and the public have confidence in the police using it.
You can read more on this story on the LBC app. A group of MPs says it's wrong that Fujitsu still hasn't contributed to payments for victims of the Post Office Horizon scandal. Hundreds of postmasters were wrongly convicted after Fujitsu's faulty IT system made it look like money was missing from branch accounts. Fujitsu says it is engaged with the government on the issue. And official figures show the UK economy unexpectedly failed to grow in January. The zero growth for the month was weaker than had been predicted. It followed growth of 0.1% in December. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 42 at 10,262. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, showers will linger across northern and western areas, drier and brighter in the south, a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Get 25% off coffee and pastries at Cafe Nero with Compensa Market. Take it away, Sergey.
I need a Nero. I'm holding out for a Nero to get a flat white. It's gotta be strong, and it's gotta taste good, and it's gonna be made just right. I need a Nero.
Only with the Compare the Market app, the simplest way to save.
When you take out a qualifying product, one membership a year, 25% off barista-made drinks and pastries, app only, two codes per day, exclusions and T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 4 minutes after ten. A very good morning to you. This is a funny one, actually. I'll get stuck into it shortly. Before we do that, though, do you ever have moments where you just sort of almost throw your hands up in the air and go, right, that's it, I'm out? like a member of the Dragon's Den. I'm out. How do you process this? Two stories in the news today. I think they both made our bulletin, but they're certainly both very prominent in the news this morning. One is that the Defence Secretary, John Healey, has accused Russia of having a hidden hand in Iranian strikes across the Gulf. This after British troops came under attack for the third time since the conflict began. So you have the Secretary of State for Defence in the United Kingdom, accusing Russia of being complicit in attacks across the Gulf, including attacks upon British and, of course, American soldiers, American personnel. And in the same news bulletin, in the same breath, in the same news cycle, in the same paragraph of current affairs, you have Donald Trump relaxing sanctions on Russia in order to try to keep the price of oil down that is rocketing entirely and exclusively because of his actions in the Middle East. So if you were to paraphrase that, and I want to be absolutely clear about something at this point, I don't understand this bit, but I also do. So I understand why they are relaxing sanctions on Russia, because they are prioritizing the price of oil over continuing to penalize Vladimir Putin over the illegal invasion of Ukraine. But I also don't understand how I can be able to say, without any fear of inaccuracy or exaggeration, the sentence that I am about to say. Vladimir Putin is helping Iran attack Americans, and Donald Trump is helping Vladimir Putin. I can't drop Americans to America, can we? So Vladimir Putin stands accused of helping Iran attack the United States. Vladimir Putin stands accused by the British Secretary of State for Defense of helping Iran attack Donald Trump's United States, while Donald Trump's United States is relaxing sanctions against Russia to help Vladimir Putin. Look, by design or by accident, it doesn't matter. This is great news for Vladimir Putin, who is on the opposing side in a war that the United States just started. I need a guest. This never happens, really. It's not a phone-in, is it? I need a guest. We should have a button in the studio for when we turn into every other radio program under the sun and actually book a guest to come on, rather than rely upon the best callers in the business to explain everything to us. Or, of course, to deploy our own brains. I need a guest. Is that as bonkers as it sounds, or is there room for a little bit more calmness? We could be a little bit more sanguine about it. Vladimir Putin is helping Iran attack America, and America is helping Vladimir Putin sell oil. I'm going home. That's it. What do you do now? If you're supposed to do this for a living, you try to make sense of this madness. No wonder some of the people that were cheering for war 10 minutes ago are now desperate not to mention it at all. I'll play a game. On what page of today's Daily Mail do you think the war in Iran, that they are not only massively supportive of, but also adamant that Keir Starmer was a traitor and a fool not to join? Remember, their columnists oscillated between being embarrassed to contact their American friends to being more ashamed to be British than at any other point in my life. Guess what page today you have to reach in the Daily Mail before they even mention the war? Should we do a multiple choice, Keith? Is it page 1? Is it page 5? Or is it page 10 that you have to turn to in the Daily Mail, the king among the warmongers in this country, full of columnists who are absolutely adamant that Keir Starmer was a disgrace not to join in Donald Trump's war? How many pages do they fill today before they actually even mention the fact or turn attention to the fact that the war continues? Is it on page 1, is it on page 5, or is it on page 10? And continuing my increasingly unfashionable obsession with British newspapers, I spend a lot of time criticising the Daily Telegraph, partly for personal reasons, it's my late father's old paper, and partly because they have gone absolutely stark staring mad on their comment pages. Some of the stuff that they publish under unhinged headlines is beyond parody now, as we demonstrated yesterday. But they have an extraordinarily comprehensive, informative and detailed account of the latest developments across the first 3, 4 or 5 pages of their newspaper today. So credit where credit is due. From the first headline about Russia being behind the attack on UK troops, even as Donald Trump, who was insulting our Prime Minister last week, essentially writes checks for Vladimir Putin, right through to the latest events in the Middle East, they have covered themselves in glory. They also resist the temptation, which all of the Boris Johnson fan club is doing today, of pretending that the Peter Mandelson scandal has somehow portrayed Keir Starmer as a liar. It may do, never say never, but for James Cleverly or Kemi Badenoch, who have still not removed their noses from between the buttocks of Boris Johnson, and of course a long, long, long line of client journalists who sat here chuckling and cheering as Boris Johnson rode roughshod over everything from parliamentary procedure to ministerial standards to basic honesty and truth, lied and lied and lied again and got busted for it again and again and again and again. For these people now to pretend that they care about the possibility of a prime minister being economical with the actuality is objectively hilarious, even if their heads are too far up Boris Johnson's backsides for them to appreciate it themselves. So you would, wouldn't you? If you'd been calling for war last week, and if you'd been cheering Boris Johnson's myriad lies to the rafters for the last few years, you too would be desperate to talk about anything except the things that you were desperate to talk about last week. But that's not what we're going to talk about today. Another journalist I'd like to give some credit to. He's a friend of mine. You may know him. He's called Ian Dunt. Does some brilliant podcasts, and he writes a Substack that I subscribe to. I pay for this Substack. It's called Striking 13, which I presume is a reference to the first line of 1984. But it is available for free as well. He's an old lefty in many ways, so you can access it for free if you can't afford it. But if you can afford a few quid, then you can chuck it towards Ian. And he's written a piece today that's really focused my mind. It's really focused my mind. I should keep a little list of all the Substacks I subscribe to, just in case you're remotely interested. Let's do that before the end of the programme. Somebody remind me, because I started today's show with absolutely nothing written down. I like to boast to you occasionally about starting the day with three words. We'll build an entire three-hour radio show around three little words. Today I've written nothing down before I came into the studio. I've started doodling since I sat down, and all I've written so far is the pages of the daily. I didn't even know what I'd written down there. I've written down three numbers, 1, 5, and 10. On what page of the Super Sore Away Daily Mail, your favourite warmongering organ, on what page did they finally turn their attention to the existence of a war that last week they were desperate not only to join, but to use to attack Keir Starmer? Page 1, page 5, or page 10. That's all I've got written down. So I should make a little note about the Substacks as well. But Dunt makes a powerful point today. Let me read it to you, actually. First of all, he explains why he's turning his attention to the markets. Last week I wrote about the political and media response to the war in Iran. This week I'm going to write about the market reaction. In both cases, we are witnessing the same process. The refusal of people to accept that the world is run by a madman. Any early responses to that? Because we've sat here now for the best part of a fortnight trying to unravel events, trying to make sense of scenarios. What if Ian's right and we are all wasting our time? Because it is like the proverbial pigeon playing chess, who just struts all over the board, pooping and knocking pieces over before claiming victory and doing a lap of honour while everybody else sits there playing rook 4 to knight 2. What if he's right? This is theory number one of why there is currently a war in Iran. Because this sentence here is haunting me this morning. It contains a word which is, if you're not familiar with Ian Dunt's work, characteristic of his vocabulary, and it's a word that Ofcom doesn't allow me to say on the radio, but you can improvise or work out for yourself. But the truth is, there is no strategy to what the White House does. There is no calculation. There is no sense of logic or application. It is a chuffing madhouse. I got close to this at the beginning of last week when I said, is there any point trying to work things out when you are dealing with somebody so obviously bonkers? But I don't know that you can ever stop, can you? And what do you do if you take this analysis to its logical conclusion? You probably start talking about lollipop ladies. Of course, you will also start talking about lollipop ladies if you're too ashamed and embarrassed to admit how badly wrong you've called everything since not only Donald Trump decided to run for presidential office, but also started another war, this time in Iran. But for the rest of us who acknowledge facts and reality and our own mistakes, for the rest of us, what do you do if this analysis is correct? I don't know that I am ready to accept it, but it goes down on my list. The first word I have written down today is dunt. And that is the first theory of why this war is happening. I have a current favourite, and I am going to throw open the phone lines shortly and invite you either to add to the list, to vote for things on the list, or to insist that things should be removed from the list because they're so obviously wrong. I honestly think, am I going to go there? Yeah, I am going to go there. I think the biggest reason, there's not going to be an only reason, so under Dunt's analysis, there are no reasons. It is just a pigeon parading across a chessboard. I don't buy that. Somewhere inside Donald Trump's brain, if you could somehow get a microscope and a computer and find a rationale for what he has done, there will be a reason. It won't just be a sort of belch of activity. Why on earth have you done this? If you could drill right down, pump him full of truth serum, and drill right down into what passes for his brain, there must be something there, mustn't there? Why have you done this? The answer can't be, because I'm completely mad. Because I am absolutely hat stand. So, Dunt's theory of the hat stand is number one. Mine, and I am far from alone in this position, and I'm embarrassed, frankly, to have arrived at it now so completely, given that I was a little bit sniffy and perhaps even, perish the thought, a little bit condescending about people who've been saying this from the start. I think it's Epstein. If you use Occam's razor and you dismiss the possibility that he is just mad, and it's like a sort of weird spasm that makes no sense at all and has no intellectual basis. He's just started a war! War! If you remove that from the table, and you might not want me to, what are you left with? Why has he done it? So, theory number two, Epstein. Don't look over here, look over there. You know, it's brought down the US ambassador, the British ambassador to the USA. It's seen a member of the royal family literally removed from the royal family. It's seen various bankers and diplomats and foreign politicians see their careers end in ignominy. It's even seen characters like Bill Gates move from borderline sainthood to Sultans of Sleaze status. Just a little shout out there for the Dire Straits fans. What other reason is there, if not to distract from the fact that he is all over the Epstein files and accused within them of truly hideous and unthinkable crimes? With, of course, the constant caveat that he denies all wrongdoing, as does Andrew Windsor, and that just because these allegations are made in the files does not mean they're true. So you've got Dunt's theory of the hat stand. Stop trying to analyse it all. He's just mad. Then you've got the Epstein distraction, the dead cat. The hat stand, the dead cat. Then you've got the puppet. You've got the Marco Rubio explanation that Benjamin Netanyahu was getting ready to attack Iran, whether America joined in or not, and America decided that they had to join in because they had to retaliate against the retaliation that they were not able to stop because Netanyahu has gone completely rogue. So Netanyahu's puppet is theory number three. We've got the hat stand, the dead cat, and the puppet. Anything else to put on the list? Any other reason? So what I want to do today, as you've probably calculated or worked out already, is decide which one you believe the most. Which of these reasons for this war, that is now 2 weeks old, you think is most compelling and most convincing? Is it simply the fact that Donald Trump is mad and this is his latest spasm, stroke, belch, stroke, brain flatulence? Is it that he is so desperate to move attention away from the Epstein files that he has launched a war in the Middle East. Is it that Benjamin Netanyahu was going to do it anyway for reasons similar to why he's conducted a genocide in Gaza, and the American administration felt it had to be involved, not least because retaliation from Iran would involve the targeting of American assets? Is it because his popularity among his own voters, let alone the rest of the electorate, is at an all-time low, and the economy is, or the cost of living is soaring? So is it because he hasn't really delivered on any of the things he promised to deliver on, except the deportations? So that even the racists, it would appear, have a limit of how much they will ignore in return for having their dreams met regarding the racism. So is it just because of the looming midterms that it's a desperate roll of the dice in terms of his political fortunes? That's four. What else have we got on the list? I mean, would we go as far as to suggest that he's done it? No, I don't think we put Vladimir Putin on this list. He's on all the other lists. The only thing you can say with any certainty about Donald Trump is that he will never do anything that really upsets Vladimir Putin. You can say the same about Nigel Farage, actually. Make of that what you will. He'll never do anything that really upsets Vladimir Putin. Farage yesterday was trying to argue that Vladimir Putin, who is a war criminal, has invaded foreign countries and possesses nuclear weapons, is a bigger threat to the West than Iran, that doesn't have nuclear weapons and hasn't invaded any other sovereign countries. Funny that, isn't it? So I don't think Vladimir Putin told him to, fits on this list, but it's your list. It's not my list, it's your, well, it's our list. So if you want to put that on the list, give me a ring, tell me why, on 0345-6060-973. The hat stand, the dead cat, the puppet and the popularity. Four theories. Are there any others? Have we got another one? Can you think of any other theories? Is there anything that we've missed? Regime change. Yep, that's right. That was on the list, and then it wasn't on the list. But that doesn't mean it shouldn't be on our list, just because they said it was about regime change, and then they said it wasn't. And the man whose regime they sought to change has currently been replaced by his own son. So do you think it really was regime change? They just somehow changed their mind halfway through the war? Human rights abuses. How does that work? Well, they're killing people in Iran, so we're going to go and kill people in Iran. Okay, it doesn't sound immediately logical, but it might be the reason. They genuinely care. Donald Trump, because remember, it's the machinations of what passes for his mind that we're trying to unravel here. Donald Trump cares passionately about the plight of Iranian civilians. Theory number six. And he honestly thought he'd be able to help them. I can't keep a straight face saying that, but I can write it down on my list. Sorry, our list. So we're up to six now. Any more? Any more for any more? We've got the theory of the hat stand. We've got the dead cat. We've got the puppet. We've got the popularity. We've got regime change. We've got human rights abuses, stroke, concern for the Iranian populace. That's six. There's room for more, or there's room for you to tell me which one of those you most subscribe to. And remember on this program, crucially, why. Seven is going to be money. Stroke oil, stroke profits. They sometimes say the quiet part out loud. And Trump did yesterday reveal that we are going to make a lot of money out of this war. But I've got a sneaking suspicion that he doesn't mean you, he doesn't mean me, and he doesn't mean the average American. Some people are going to make a hell of a lot of money out of this war, and they will all be very, very close to, or possibly related, if not biologically, then by marriage, to Donald Trump. So, 2 weeks in, dust not settling, warmongers falling strangely silent, people who predicted exactly what would happen, not feeling remotely smug because the stakes are so hideously high. 2 weeks in, why did he do it? Why did he do it? 0345-6060-973. I mean it. I need to know which one you back. Because right now, I'm 52% Epstein, 48% something else.
LBC.
Imagine a breakfast wrap. You know the one, because there really is only one. Sausage, egg, cheese, bacon and a potato rosti all wrapped together. Yep, there it is. I think my work here is done. Served until 11 a.m.
We all want to live well and age well. That means having independence and positive choices to enjoy the life we choose. That's what Elmbridge in Cranley is all about. A place of fun. A friendship in a hive of activity. But above all, it's a place to put your independence and well-being first. To find out more about Elmbridge in Cranley, visit our website today at retirementvillagers.co.uk/Elmbridge.
Hello, I'm the new deal or no deal scratch card from the National Lottery. The banker called. He doesn't think you have what it takes to beat him. But forget that guy. Play me today and you could be one of millions of instant winners and show that mean old money grabber who the real big deal is.
Pick up the new deal or no deal scratch card in store today. Search Dream Big Play Small. Rules apply. 18 plus.
This was made with human intelligence.
And artificial intelligence.
Just like Intuit QuickBooks business management software. If you're a sole trader earning over 50K from April 2026, making tax digital means...
you have to file your taxes online.
But new QuickBooks AI has...
automated tools to help make compliance easier.
I was going to say that. I'll do it with Intuit QuickBooks.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
24 minutes after 10 is the time. Simon in Bournemouth and Keith both adding the same possibility to the list, which takes the number up to 8. I mean, we could conceivably have 10 reasons, 10 options. And, of course, 2 things can be true at the same time. 3 things can be true at the same time. 10 things can be true at the same time. So and we may end up thinking all of these reasons or many of these reasons are a little bit true. But Simon in Bournemouth puts it well, and Keith whispered into my ear during the break, that it is perfectly possible that it's all about cancelling the midterms. One of the reasons why Volodymyr Zelensky hasn't gone to the polls in Ukraine, well, the main reason why he hasn't gone to the polls as scheduled in Ukraine, is because he's at war with Russia, having been illegally invaded by Donald Trump and Nigel Farage's favourite foreign politician. But Donald Trump turns to the American people, and remember, the truth doesn't matter, and says, oh, we can't have midterms because we're at war. It's not impossible, is it? And it is option number 8 on this list. Brian's in Derry. Brian, which one are you going to go for?
Good morning, James.
Hello, Brian. Midterm. What, the midterms to improve his chances in them or to cancel them?
Well, if they go ahead, yes. the possibility... of Donald Trump being impeached.
Yes, increases.
Increases, and this is all done, which I find, you know, sickening and revolting. This is all done, this war to kill thousands of people, is all done to protect Donald Trump's own skin.
So he thinks that his popularity will increase as the war continues? Or when he announces, as we said last week, he definitely will, a glorious victory, despite the fact that there hasn't been one, enough of his base will be fooled into thinking he's some sort of strategic and military genius, and his poll ratings and therefore his results in the midterms will go up.
Well, he'll probably venerate himself with a lot of medals. This whole thing reminds me of the old Hans Christian Andersen, I think it was, fairy tale. The Emperor's New Clothes.
Yeah, everything about him is the Emperor's New Clothes. Has been for years, hasn't it?
Yeah, and one other point, James, just before I go.
Yeah.
Can anybody think back to 2-3 weeks ago, what the both sides or all the interested parties on this conflict, now current conflict, what were they doing?
What do you mean?
Well, they were talking, negotiating.
Oh, of course, yes. And I mean, according to I think it was the Qataris who were hosting the negotiations, they were actually going rather well. And then, lo and behold, we woke up the next morning and Netanyahu and Trump had started a war. What does that tell us? That they didn't want a negotiation?
Well, what do you think, you know, whenever this...
Stop asking me questions. That's my job. Just give me the
all
answers.
Right. Okay. Well, what they'll be doing at the end of all this conflict will be...
is negotiations.
Negotiations. So we're back where we started.
But with Iran having had the Ayatollah removed, probably replaced by his son, and as you pointed out, civilian casualties and deaths, and of course some American soldiers coming home in body bags, and people being injured and killed in other Gulf states as well, although thankfully at the moment on relatively small scales. Long may that continue. So we've got the popularity. It was option 4. Brian's gone for. Trump thinks this will enhance his popularity, which is currently pitifully low. 28 minutes after 10. If you're just joining us, we've got 8 reasons for this war now. And it's a very different question from when we first asked it, because now we've watched the war. We've got the theory of the hat stand. Ian Dunt, the brilliant journalist, simply saying he's too mad to analyse. Don't bother even trying. He's bonkers. That's all you can say. It's all you can do. And the world is not capable of processing that fact. So we have to continue talking about it as if he isn't. You've got got the dead cat theory, the Epstein files, the desperation to avoid the attention that is now rightly being paid to the chronicles of the hideous paedophile and former best friend of Donald Trump. You've got the Israeli angle, the fact that Netanyahu, according to Marco Rubio, was going to go ahead with this attack on Iran anyway, having spent decades lying about Iran's weapons capabilities, and Donald Trump or the American administration felt that they had to join in. You've got regime change. One of the original claims they made and then unmade and then made again and then unmade again. So I don't know. Maybe it was true. Maybe it wasn't. Put it on the list. That's number five. Popularity at four. You've got the claim that it was motivated by a moral concern about the human rights abuses being visited upon the people of Iran. And just the people to lead that kind of admission would be someone who's committed a genocide in Gaza and somebody whose regime is shooting his own citizens in the face in Minneapolis. Money or oil? Just cash. There's always cash. Follow the money. Seems tempting, but I think possibly a little bit glib on this occasion, or he will use it as an opportunity or a springboard from which to cancel the midterms entirely because he knows he's going to lose them and he knows that the war isn't going to create a boost in popularity that would deliver a different result. Those are your votes. Those are your options. What are your votes? Here's Dominic Ellis with the headlines.
The US has confirmed that four crew members have died in a crash involving a refueling plane in western Iraq. Washington earlier said that it wasn't as a result of hostile or friendly fire. An energy minister has told LBC that Britain is looking at all options in helping keep the Strait of Hormuz open. The Trump administration has suggested that the US Navy could be used to protect oil tankers in the vital waterway from Iranian attacks. And official figures show the UK economy failed to grow in January. There had been growth of 0.1% in December. LBC weather. Showers will linger across northern and western areas, drier and brighter in the south, a high of 10 degrees.
This is LBC.
Imagine a breakfast wrap. You know the one, because there really is only one. Sausage, egg, cheese, bacon and a potato rosti all wrapped together. Yep, there it is. I think my work here is done. Served until 11 a.m.
The Easter event at Bicester Village is on from the 20th of March to the 6th of April. Shop, savor, repeat with up to 50% off the original retail price at Monica Vinader, UGG and more. On select lines and brands, T's and C's apply. See bistervillage.com. Bicester Village. What will you find?
In the Wren Spring Sale, you can get an amazing deal faster than you can say incredible value. Visit your local Wren showroom right now and get up to 60% off our high-quality, fully-built kitchen units and an AEG dishwasher for just £149. Plus, there's up to 7 years interest-free credit. Made for giving your kitchen a new beginning this spring. Wren, made for living. Offers apply when you buy five or more kitchen units. Dishwasher offer ends 25th of March. One per customer. Finance subject to status and minimum spend.
The all-new, all-electric Toyota CHR Plus. Sleek, stylish and quietly reliable. Available with 0% APR representative with £1,500 deposit contribution and save £1,500 with the electric car grant. Get that Toyota electric feeling. Visit your nearest centre. Stephen Eagle, Toyota Horsham. Price from £34,495. Available on Toyota PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by 30th of June 2026. Optional final payment. Indemnities may be required. See website. T's and C's apply.
This was made with human intelligence.
And artificial intelligence.
Just like Intuit QuickBooks business management software. If you're a sole trader earning over 50K from April 2026, making tax digital means...
you have to file your taxes online.
But new QuickBooks AI has...
automated tools to help make compliance easier.
I was going to say that. I'll do it with Intuit QuickBooks.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
32 minutes after 10 is the time you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I should probably reveal on what page the newspaper that was probably banging the drum for war most loudly and deploying columnists to write about how terrible it was that Keir Starmer hadn't got involved, how ashamed Richard Littlejohn, forgive me, Dick by name Littlejohn, was not to... I'm so ashamed to be British because Keir Starmer didn't join the war. Andrew Neil writing about how he couldn't tell his American friends other than that we had as a country completely lost our marbles. Yesterday he was writing about how, I can't believe Donald Trump started this war without having a plan for what would happen in the Strait of Hormuz. 8 days previously, he was writing about how he couldn't really argue with his American friends. Yeah, they go to a different school. When they complained that Britain seemed to have lost its marbles. So the Daily Mail, absolutely four square behind Donald Trump, behind Donald Trump's war, against Keir Starmer's decision not to join it. On what page do they turn their attention to the war this morning, just 2 weeks into hostilities? Let's start on page one. This is Kemi, PM has told lie after lie after lie. They have to put that in quotes, of course, because he hasn't. So the Prime Minister has been accused of lying. It's a very powerful headline until you read into who has accused him of lying, and it's Kemi Badenoch. And this morning, James Cleverly joined in, two people who had their noses inserted so tightly into Boris Johnson's buttocks that they lost the ability to smell. Which is probably just as well, given where their noses were. But if a Prime Minister lies, and you excuse him, and you champion him, and you cheer for him, and you chuckle at him, and he gets busted for lying, and he gets hounded out of Parliament for lying by his own party, you need to rely on some pretty bent client journalists to claim that suddenly you care passionately about a Prime Minister who hasn't been found, hasn't been found to have lied. So that's page one of the Daily Mail, and something about Kate Middleton not drinking alcohol. Oh, no, that's the whole of page three. Sorry. And you know, good for her. She has, of course, struggled with cancer. And it is on page three of the Daily Mail that she's cut back on alcohol since recovering from cancer. Page four, something about prostate cancer. I hope you'll be deported, is a headline. You don't really have to read it. I think that Daily Mail would apply that to pretty much everybody, Brown. There's a chef on page five who has resigned after being accused of bullying, and a story about chocolate on a 3D print. There's a war in the Middle East, everybody. There's a war in the Middle East. People are dying. Four American soldiers coming back this morning in body bags, as you just heard in the news bulletin. The Daily Mail wanted this war. They really, really wanted Keir Starmer to be in this war. Ted Verity, the editor of the Daily Mail, absolutely adamant that Keir Starmer was a disgrace for not joining this war. Their columnist, Andrew Neil, and Richard Littlejohn and others felt ashamed to be British, disgusted that Keir Starmer hadn't got stuck in. So we're on to page six now. And, it's back to Peter Mandelson. The co-hosts of Peter Mandelson's drinks reception on the night of the White House correspondents' dinner last year, the Daily Mail, I'll say that again because you still might not believe it to be true, and also there'll be an awful lot of people taking their lead this morning from the Daily Mail, not mentioning that they were the co-hosts of Peter Mandelson's ambassadorial drinks reception at last year's White House correspondents' dinner. The co-hosts of that drinks reception return to the Peter Mandelson story on page six of today's newspaper, and indeed on page seven, with the sort of crown prince of reverse ferrets, another columnist called Dan Hodges. Come on, it's got to be on page eight, has it? No, back to Blair somehow and Epstein. So page eight of the Daily Mail, the biggest warmongers in the country just a few short days ago, and we're up to page eight, and they haven't mentioned the war. They seem to be channeling Basil Fawlty on a scale the likes of which we have not seen since Fawlty Towers was on the television. So Tony Blair told Jeffrey Epstein he consulted with a religious man for personal advice during a meeting at Downing Street is also a bigger story than the continuing war in Iran. And then some photographs of some ladies at Cheltenham races yesterday. That's also more important than the war in Iran. And a story that's not true, claiming that schools have been told not to ask children to draw Jesus in case Muslims are offended. To the credit of whoever wrote this bilge, they do actually include the final paragraph, which says it's advisory and does not ban pupils from drawing any religious figures. So, oh, hallelujah, page 10. Oh, ashamed to be British, can't look my American friends in the eyes. Page 10 of the Daily Mail, before they even acknowledge that the war they were so desperate for Keir Starmer to join just last week is actually going on and going very badly. Because on page 11, they deploy the director of the Crisis Research Institute in Oxford to write under the headline, "The bizarre failure to plan for a blockade means epic fury is heading for, you guessed it, epic fail." A headline that we applied to this story at the beginning of this week. It's taken the Daily Mail a week to catch up, but better late than never, lads. Better late than never. So, the war that Keir Starmer's refusal to join made Richard Littlejohn feel more ashamed to be British than he's ever felt before in his life. The war that Keir Starmer's refusal to join made Andrew Neil embarrassed to converse with all of his American friends. They go to a different school. Has now reached a point where the pages of the newspaper that pays them for their ridiculous opinions is now paying a man to write about the scale of the failure that was visible from space if you were either vaguely honest or possessed of 11 functioning brain cells. The bizarre failure to plan for a blockade means epic fury is heading for epic fail. And the editor of the Daily Mail, Ted Verity, considers the weather blowing off some hats at the Cheltenham races, the continuing Peter Mandelson story, and a chef being forced to resign over allegations of bullying. And the Princess of Wales not drinking as much alcohol as she used to are all much more important stories than the war that they were desperate for the British Prime Minister to join. It is as if Basil Fawlty invaded the editorial conference yesterday and shouted,
"Don't mention the war!"
It's 10:39. Al's in Glasgow. Al, what would you like to say?
Yeah, hi. Actually, hello. You started off by one thing, which is saying that you wanted a guest, and I'm going to nominate Malcolm Nance.
Okay. On the relationship between the sanctions being lifted on Russia and the accusation that Russia is helping Iran.
Well, he's a U.S. intelligence officer. He fought in Desert Storm and Ukraine.
Yeah, but I should have been clearer. I need a guest on that specific issue that I'm currently confused by. So, I mean, I'll definitely put him on the list of someone we should be talking to, but I need someone who can unravel that for me. And really, to be honest, Al, I want to be reassured that it's not quite as bonkers as it looks and that there is a kind of pragmatic rationale for easing sanctions on the war criminal, even as he helps the Iranian regime attack British and American positions. But that's not why you rang in. Tell me why you did.
No. Well, as far as the war is concerned, it's not about regime change or nuclear disarmament or any of the normal sort of reasons. And I think a few people have mentioned the midterms. That's not the main reason either, I don't think. Although I do think that his stated rationale would be to postpone them rather than cancel them.
Yeah.
And he would only need to do, he could announce that in August. I think what he needs to do is keep the war going until August, and then he could say, right, I'm postponing the midterms for a year.
I think that's true. I don't know that he will, but I think it is true that he could. But that's not the reason that you're going for either. I mean, you don't have to run through all seven that you've rejected before you arrive at the one that you're endorsing, because there's quite a long queue behind you.
No, fair enough. Right, so the two main ones are money, but the top one is distraction.
So that's Epstein?
Yes, yes, from Trump's point of view, but also from Putin's point of view, and I think he is a player in this, and it's a distraction from Ukraine.
Yeah.
So, from Trump's point of view, you look at who else is involved. Who else is Trump close to? Putin, obviously, but the other two are Kushner and Witkoff.
Mm-hmm.
Kushner is interesting because he never appears in news. He's always this sort of
eminence grease, background figure, man in a suit.
Yes, but he's also the son of a jailed felon. Associate with Trump.
He certainly is. And very close friends with three brothers who got sent down yesterday for sex trafficking and hideous rape crimes. I think they were the estate agents that helped the Kushners buy an apartment in New York as well. But these are associations that don't necessarily damn a man. We've all been friends with people who have turned out not to be squeaky clean in the pub. Well, I think we have. I just want to push you towards the possibility that you're overthinking it. And that actually this is quite a complicated and sophisticated plan that you're describing, and Donald Trump is an idiot.
Yeah, well, I mean, I only mention them because all of his negotiations are financially related. But I think the top one is about Putin and distraction from Ukraine.
Wow, okay, I'll put that on the list. That goes in at 9. I don't know that I agree, but who cares, frankly, because all of these are viable suggestions. That's what happens when you have a vacuum. And of course, the enduring shame of the people that attack Keir Starmer for not joining this war is that the vacuum was visible from the very start. Now, I don't care whether you're Kemi Badenoch or James Cleverly or Richard Littlejohn or Ted Verity, the editor of the Daily Mail, or Nigel Farage. The vacuum where the rationale for war should have been was clear from day one, from minute one. And luckily, we can prove that we pointed that out at the time by the identity of the people that we kept quoting. Do you remember? It's only 2 weeks ago. General David Petraeus. Tell me how this ends. General Colin Powell. You need to have a clear political objective before you start a war. And the other piece of the jigsaw, the laminated piece of the jigsaw, the Chilcot checklist. The 10 things that a British Prime Minister must do, having learned the lessons of the Chilcot inquiry and the lessons of the Iraq war before joining another war. And Keir Starmer has abided by that list like a duck abides to water. But of course, such is the nature of the client media in this country and the appalling Tory bias and the hideous dishonesty and moral corruption of organs like the Daily Mail, that they are now just pretending that they never called for it in the first place. Not wasting any energy as we are this morning trying to work out why it's still happening. Jake's in Wimbledon. Jake, what do you reckon?
Hello.
Hello.
I think he's bored. I just think he gets bored.
That's number 10 then.
It's very simple, yeah. And I think if you mix into that the brew of his dementia, which was probably there in the first term he was in, you mix it together. He just things keep coming up on his desk, like the Epstein.
Got to do something. I've just got to do something. It's like a child with a very short attention span. I mean, I mean, boredom, oddly, probably comes closest. It's probably the biggest umbrella, Jake. I think under the umbrella of boredom, you can probably fit more of the other 9 reasons on my list than any other umbrella.
Yeah, and you should be very scared of boredom, because I think history tells you, if you sort of look at, I'm always careful about sort of comparing someone to Hitler, but you know, you kind of think people make impetuous decisions in power. I think literally because they're bored. And they just want to throw things up in the air and see how they land, you know.
And that fits probably closest to the theory of the hat stand, Ian Dunt's theory that he's just mad and the world cannot process the fact that somebody so powerful is just mad. And a madman who is bored does mad things.
Yeah. I don't think he gives a dingo's kidneys about anything, really.
Is that a figure of speech that you've just invented, or is that one that's in common parlance already? Because I love it.
I was trying to think of some. I wanted to say a ruder word.
A dingo's kidneys.
I think it's a Douglas Adams one, isn't it?
Oh, of course it is. There's so many. You show me a felicitous phrasing that I'm not familiar with, and it's almost certainly going to have its roots in the genius that was, sadly, Douglas Adams. Jake, beautiful stuff. All right, we'll put that on the list. We're not really canvassing votes at the moment. The last 2 callers have added things to my already 8-strong list, but you can carry on. We might continue this conversation for a little longer than the first hour. I might even run through the Chilcot checklist at some point, and I do want to talk to somebody who can just hopefully, because you think about being patriotic and wanting the best for your country, is that even if you rightly despise somebody like Donald Trump, you still don't want everything he does to be disastrous, just to prove that you were right to despise him in the first place. It's like the opposite position to those who deploy the phrase, what was it again? Trump derangement syndrome, to describe people who've subsequently been proved right about absolutely everything. You don't want to be like them. So I want someone to explain to me why lifting some of the sanctions on Russia selling oil into the market is not the hideous moment in the current historical cycle that it appears to be. I want to be persuaded by someone who understands things better than I do that that's not actually a disaster for Ukraine, a disaster for the world, a disaster for everybody. It's 10:47.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC. As the government bans the pro-Iranian regime march in London this weekend,
there will therefore be a prohibition on processions in London related to Al-Quds Day.
Thousands are still expected to attend a stationary demonstration in favour of the Ayatollah. You'll hear from the convicted terrorist who plotted to blow up the British embassy in Yemen, who is standing for election in Birmingham. Plus,
we're not leaving until that job is finished, and it's going to be very fast.
I'll be joined by the former US Navy SEAL who killed Osama bin Laden. Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
So, what's on your to-do list today?
Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Saturday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
A Southern Train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Listeners, we interrupt the airwaves to share an incredible discovery. The reason why Britain hasn't been so great of late is because the country hasn't been eating enough Weetabix. We must get to work in rebuilding Great Britain, Bix by Bix. By delivering Weetabix to whoever plans the traffic diversions, to delivery drivers who can't seem to find your house,
and people who don't stack the dishwasher properly.
To Britain, we must say, have you had your Weetabix?
Aye, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting is changing.
At AJ Bell, we believe every customer deserves brilliant service, which is just one reason we're rated excellent on Trustpilot. And we all trust pilots, with their smooth, captainy voices that make you feel like you'd let them land anywhere they like. Sorry, where was I? Right, AJ Bell, rated excellent by sexy pilots. I mean Trustpilot. I'm a flight risk. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 10:51 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Not for the first time this week. Catch-22 has appeared in my contemplations, this time as a consequence of Pavel in Poland. Reminding me of an element of it. I dropped a minor clanger, didn't I, earlier? It was late last week when I mistakenly described it as being set during the Vietnam War. It's a long time since I've read it. It's even longer since I was in it. Have I told you what happened to me with regard to Catch-22 in about 1991? The summer of 91, probably? When the University of London Drama Society took a production of Catch-22 to the Edinburgh Festival. The Edinburgh Fringe Festival. And we had received permission from Joseph Heller to adapt it into a play, something that was not easily given. And he came... Oh, I can never remember. So we did two plays that summer. We did Slum Clearance by Václav Havel, who, of course, was a playwright and poet who went on to be the president of the Czech Republic. And we did Catch-22 by Joseph Heller. And I was a young man, and I was not a very serious man, Keith. I was not a very serious man at that stage in my life, and I don't have a huge memory of that summer. I acquitted myself perfectly well. I delivered all my lines in the right order, at the right time, on the right stage, in the right place. But it's fair to say that the theatrical pursuits that summer were not my top priority. I think you can probably work out what was. It's a short list, but it didn't really change until I met my wife, that list. And so those are my abiding memories of that summer. So we did two plays, Slum Clearance by Václav Havel and Catch-22 by Joseph Heller, and one of those two men came to see the play that we did. And I can't remember which one it was. So either, would he have been the president of the Czech Republic in 1990? I mean, he'd been very busy either way. But either Václav Havel or Joseph Heller were in Edinburgh anyway for the festival, which is not that surprising, given that they're both brilliant and feted writers. and we received a message that the author was coming to see the play that we were putting on in an old Masonic hall. Masonic. An old Masonic hall just off the Royal Mile. Just down from the castle at the top of the Royal Mile in Edinburgh. Do you know, I think I can even remember what it was called, so my memory wasn't completely shot to pieces. It was called the Roman Eagle Lodge. It was a Masonic hall at the top of the Royal Mile, just on the left before you get to the castle. And we put on the Slum Clearance, the play by Václav Havel, a brilliant play, starring David Farrar, who you may have come across recently as a sports commentator at the Winter Olympics, would you believe? Him and I, we were a double act at the Václav Havel play. And Catch-22, an adaptation of Catch-22 by Joseph Heller. And one of them came to see it, and I can't remember which one it was. Actually, I just remembered another story from that summer. You're not going to believe, the guy who played the lead in Catch-22, Yossarian, is the name of the character. I could sit here for a month of Sundays before you would guess what he does now. He let me just give you a clue. He performs regularly to tens of thousands, or thousands and thousands and thousands of people. The star of the play that I was in the Edinburgh Festival in either 1990 or 1991, I can't remember which, he now performs regularly to thousands of people. But if I stayed here until next Monday's show started, you would not guess correctly what it is that he does, and I'll probably forget to tell you anyway. So anyway, back to Catch-22. The mess officer turned syndicate founder, of course, Milo Minderbinder, Pavel reminds us from Poland, bombed his own base and troops because it was good for the syndicate. It made money. And this beautiful logic that runs through Catch-22, this warped logic that defines both what Catch-22 is and the entire thrust of the masterpiece that it is, what's good for the syndicate is good for the country. He even convinced the troops to support him and to support the attacks on their own base by sharing the profits from it with them, and he was ultimately exonerated by his superiors. One of those wonderful examples of satire coming perilously close to reality. So I presume Pavel is going with option 7, which is simply, it's all about the Benjamins. They've done it for the money. John's in Newcastle. Why do you think they've done it, John?
Hi, James.
Hello.
Yeah, I think it's because he's a toddler, frankly. I think he's never quite grown up, so I'm leaning towards option 10 in that respect.
But, well, it's option 10 or option 1, isn't it? Is it because, you know, option 1 is bonkers, option 10 is bored. It could be a combination of both, because there's nothing more dangerous than a bored bonkers person.
Yeah, I just don't... I think the first time round he had the adults in the room helping to keep him in check. Now it's all yes men. He hasn't got that.
But that doesn't explain why. So even a toddler, when you ask them why they've done something, they'll say, because I want biscuit. Or something like that. Do you see what I mean? We haven't got the why of it.
Well, I suppose there's the two sides. For the sanctions, I believe he's lifted those to keep the oil price, try and keep it low, and that's to keep his base happy.
I know that. I mean, in terms of starting the war.
Well, Venezuela went well, so, you know, it's sometimes toddlers do just throw their toys out the pram and hit other children.
Yeah, you're right, for no reason whatsoever. Problem. So it's like a spasm. It's like a spasm. What's weird so far, and we may continue this conversation, is that the temptation at the beginning of this week, and certainly at the beginning and the end of last week, was to reach for one of the more rational, one of the more mature explanations, one of the more reasonable reasons, and just acknowledge that Trump was an entirely unreasonable and immature man, so the likelihood of him ever delivering on what was a clear intention was low, but the intention was nonetheless clear. That seems to have disappeared. Nobody seems to think that this was genuinely about regime change or genuinely about human rights abuses in Iran. Remember, I could hear calls on LBC. I think Nick took some on the breakfast show from people insisting that you were somehow an enemy of the Iranian people if you weren't in favour of them being attacked by Donald Trump. I've also heard people, I kid you not, claim that if you wanted to explain why this would be disastrous for Iran, then you must somehow be a fan of the Ayatollah. That probably constitutes the thing that if somebody from the left were to say it or to do it, it would be hung around their neck for the rest of their careers. A bit like being a presenter on Press TV, which was, of course, funded by Iranian state TV, and that didn't stop various members of the media and political establishment in this country from hoovering up the petrodollars. 10:58 is the time. Frank's in Carlisle, staying staying in the north. What would you like to say, Frank?
Hi, James. Nice to talk to you again. Right, I'm going to pick two of the ones you've already mentioned.
Go
Puppet
on.
And Vanity.
What was the first one?
Puppet.
Puppet. So the Netanyahu theory that Marco Rubio shared with us and then unshared the very next day.
I think that because he shared it and because it didn't actually make America look good and because of the way he completely just redacted, you know,
Trump would have hated it. How dare you tell them that I only did it because Netanyahu was going to do it? I'm Donald Trump. I'm in charge of everything.
Makes me think that that was probably true. So, but it's not just as simple as that. He's going to be 80 in 3 months. He's clearly very ill.
He's not well. I'll give you that. But we're not. Neither of us doctors.
No. But you know, even if he was, in the peak of health, he's still going to be 80 in 3 months. He's going to be thinking about his legacy. And with Trump, it's always money or vanity. So if what he wants is his name to be on things, you know, he puts his name, he looks at the Kennedy Center, he looks at everything, all the old president's names. He wants his name on stuff. What can he possibly do now? Imagine if he's considering his mortality, he's going to think, if I go, there's nobody to seal the Epstein files. That's all going to come out. That's what people are going to remember. Yeah. How great would it be if he could solve Iran? Because he'll, in simple terms, that's how he's thinking of it. He's thinking, because he doesn't go into the details. He's not a details person. He's a big picture. He wants to solve Iran. And if he can be the president who solved Iran, that's great. Israel will be happy with that because obviously Iran and Israel hate each other. So that's fairly standard. And that's what he's doing. I want to know, though, who's pulling the strings in America? Because I don't think, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu or his people rang up Trump and said, we're going to war. There must be people in America who were pulling Donald Trump's strings because he's very malleable.
So this is appealing to his ego. This is appealing to his ego. You can be the guy who... dot, dot, dot. And then...
Yeah, somebody's whispering in his ear and saying that. I could add a theory, which is basically the Grand Vizier theory. You know, there's an evil vizier somewhere.
Stephen Miller.
Maybe a lot of them.
Stephen Miller.
Stephen Miller, tech bros. You know, what are we not seeing?
This is where I find Ian Dunn a little bit more persuasive, because I'm like you. I fall into the trap of thinking there's got to be... I did it during COVID with... what's his chops? That weirdo who went to Barnard Castle. What was his name? Dominic Cummings. I just kept thinking, maybe there is some master plan that we're not seeing. And that's what you're doing. Whereas Dunt writes on his brilliant Striking 13 Substack, here it is. We are witnessing the same, the refusal of people to accept that the world is run by a madman. The truth is there is no strategy to what the White House does. There is no calculation. There is no sense of logic or application. It is a flipping madhouse. And then all of these theories it is literally a waste of time doing what we're doing and positing the existence of a grand vizier or someone pouring poison into his ear or stroking his ego or giving him an opportunity to duck the midterms or improve his popularity or change the regime or avoid the Epstein files or make some money or distract from Ukraine. We could sit here till we're blue in the face, when the real answer is it is a chuffing madhouse.
Yeah, that's fair. Russia Oil, he's just pulling levers. He doesn't know how the machine works. He knows that
I think it's worse than that. I'm going to see if Bill Browder's around. He's the man I owe all of my understanding to Vladimir Putin to, and I'd be fascinated to know what his reaction is to the idea that the British Defence Secretary is accusing Vladimir Putin of helping Iran, and Donald Trump woke up this morning and decided the best thing he could do in these circumstances was help Vladimir Putin. Thank you, Frank. Is it a coincidence that on the same day it was reported that Nigel Farage had come out and said that the Iranian regime, which has not invaded any other countries and doesn't have any nuclear weapons, was more dangerous than Russia, which has invaded other countries illegally and has a shedload of nuclear weapons? Funny that. And remember, there is absolutely no suggestion that, like his very, very close friend and protege and former leader of his party in Wales, there's no suggestion at all that Nigel Farage takes money from Kremlin stooges in order to parrot Kremlin talking points and talk up Vladimir Putin all the time. It is absolutely plausible that Nigel Farage does it entirely for free.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From From Global's newsroom, the United States has confirmed that four crew members have died in a crash involving a refueling plane in western Iraq. It's understood six people were on board, with rescue efforts continuing. LBC's correspondent Ollie Barrett, who's in the Iraqi city of Erbil, has more details.
The Americans say this was not a hostile fire incident or even a friendly fire incident. We do know there was another plane involved, another American plane involved in some way. That one managed to land safely, we are told. But there is this disputed narrative here, because there is an Iran-backed group which is saying that it shot down the plane over Iraqi airspace. And as I say, the Americans are flatly denying that.
An energy minister has told LBC that Britain is looking at all options in helping to keep the Strait of Hormuz open. The US has suggested its navy could be used to protect oil tankers from Iranian attacks in the vital waterway. The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, will meet fuel and energy bosses later to discuss soaring oil prices. The Conservatives have called for the Prime Minister's ethics adviser to investigate his handling of the Peter Mandelson scandal. The Tories claim part of the paperwork is missing over the peer's appointment as the UK's ambassador to Washington. Files released on Tuesday show Sir Keir Starmer was warned of a general reputational risk over Lord Mandelson's links to Jeffrey Epstein. The Shadow Minister, Sir James Cleverly, has told LBC that he's certain Sir Keir misled MPs over what he knew and when.
The Prime Minister, against official advice and circumventing the system in the full knowledge that Mandelson had maintained a friendship with Jeffrey Epstein, a convicted child sexual offender, appointed him to the most high-profile ambassadorial position in the world. And that is on him. He said he's apologised and taken responsibility. He's done nothing. Where is the culpability?
Downing Street insists there's been no cover-up in files about Lord Mandelson's vetting process. Peter Mandelson has previously denied any wrongdoing over his friendship with Epstein. Three Metropolitan Police officers are being investigated over an alleged assault on a black teenager in North London. The 16-year-old, who's not been charged with any offences, suffered a broken knee when he was tackled in Tottenham last April. The watchdog has told LBC it's looking at whether race was a factor in his treatment. You can read more on this story on the LBC app. And official figures show the UK economy failed to grow in January. There had been growth of 0.1% in December. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 31 at 10,273. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, showers will linger across northern and western areas, drier and brighter in the south. A high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Project Hail Mary is an extraordinary cinematic experience.
You're a great scientist, Dr. Grace. The world is counting on you.
Starring Ryan Gosling.
So, I met an alien.
Two worlds, one impossible mission.
We're going to save the stars.
Project Hail Mary.
Amaze, amaze, amaze.
See it first March 14th and 15th in cinemas everywhere March 19th.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Six minutes after 11 is the time. I want to be absolutely clear that this is a symptom of what we're describing, but the British version. It is perfectly right for our news bulletin to carry comments from James Cleverly about Boris Johnson, and there is not, about Keir Starmer, and there is not room in a news bulletin to remind you of what James Cleverly's qualifications are to criticise or critique a Prime Minister for allegedly, but not by any stretch of the imagination, provenly having lied or misled the House of Commons. Luckily, I've got the time and the space to do that, so I will remind you now that James Cleverly is the bloke who endorsed Boris Johnson's bid to return to 10 Downing Street as Prime Minister after he had resigned in disgrace, prior to the findings of a committee made up, I think, of a plurality of Conservative members, that he was a barefaced serial liar. So, James Cleverly, in what we're talking about October now, are we, of 2022, was Foreign Secretary for 10 minutes. After Liz Truss resigned, James Cleverly was one of the biggest voices to call for Boris Johnson to return as Prime Minister. I'm going to quote you what he said at the time, because the man has the sheer effrontery to be touring the studios this morning, and I hope he got challenged in some studios, because he certainly didn't get challenged in this one, claiming that he can sit in judgment upon the probity or the integrity of Keir Starmer, having said just 4 short years ago, and I kid you not, you'll think this has come out of private eye, but it's real, "I know Boris has learned lessons from his time in Number 10 and will ensure the focus is on the needs of the country from day one." Let me remind you of the myriad things that Boris Johnson lied about. The reason why he finally lost the confidence of his own party was because he appointed a man accused of groping. He appointed a man accused of grabbing people by their intimate parts to a job as a whip in his party, and it then emerged he knew that the bloke had been accused of grabbing people by their intimate parts. That was the relatively small straw that broke the camel's back, because people realised he was not capable of not lying. But the favourite lies, the ones that really did for him, were when he stood up in the House of Commons and said there hadn't been any parties at Downing Street during the COVID lockdowns. And then he stood up in the House of Commons and said there hadn't been, well, actually, I'm sorry, there had been parties in Downing Street during the COVID lockdowns, but I didn't know anything about them. And then he stood up in the House of Commons and said, well, actually, there were parties in Downing Street during the COVID lockdowns, and I did know about them, but I definitely didn't go to any of them. And then he stood up in the House of Commons and said, well, there were parties in Downing Street during the COVID lockdowns, and I did know about them, and I did go to them. And that is the catalogue of calumny, the absolute avalanche of dishonesty that hold Boris Johnson below the waterline so completely that when it turned out he'd also been lying about promoting a sex pest, an alleged sex pest, to a senior government position, they decided that they'd had enough of him. If you are an idiot, a terminally online avatar, or a client journalist so far up the backside of the Conservative Party that you have forgotten what day it is and can't tell whether it's day or night, at this point you say, oh, Boris Johnson had to go because he ate some cake. You hold your readers, your viewers, your listeners in such obvious and complete contempt that you think they're too thick to remember what actually happened. Boris Johnson had to eat some cake. He had to go because he ate some cake. James Cleverly turns up in the studios this morning accusing Keir Starmer with no basis or evidence yet. The evidence may emerge of being a liar, but he was perfectly happy for Boris Johnson, a proven liar, hounded out of office, resigned in disgrace, didn't even have the guts to face the music. He ran off before the music even started playing. But back in 2022, James Cleverly thought that Boris Johnson should return as Prime Minister because, and I quote, he has learned lessons from his time in Number 10. This is a bloke. They're calling today for the Prime Minister's ethics advisor to look again at the Mandelson story. Two ethics advisers resigned in disgust at Boris Johnson's contempt for ethics. But James Cleverly thought he should have another go as Prime Minister in 2022. There are days when I think I'm the only person who bothers to remember this stuff. Oh, who should we get to talk about what a bad egg Keir Starmer is? Who are the Tories offering up today to talk about what a bad egg Keir Starmer is? Well, we could have James Cleverly on. What, James? The one who wanted Boris Johnson to come back and have another go as Prime Minister in 2022 after he'd been busted for lying on a nuclear scale, after two ethics advisers had resigned in disgust at his absolute contempt for ethics. What on earth is James Cleverly going to come on my programme and say? He's going to say that the ethics advisers should get involved. Oh, but all right, just book him, bring him on, but don't mention the fact that I used to pretend not to think that ethics advisers mattered because it was the only way I could sustain my support for Boris Johnson after he'd been revealed to be all of the things that his critics repeatedly explained. And there is the parallel with Donald Trump. He is all of the things that his critics have repeatedly explained. But if you've got your head up Boris Johnson's backside, you are almost certainly somebody who has deployed the phrase Trump derangement syndrome to describe those in your own industry who've been proved right about everything. Which brings us to the thing that we will never be proved right about. The choice this morning of reasons why Donald Trump went to war in Iran. And we're nowhere near a consensus. You have Ian Dunt's theory of the hat stand. More on that in a moment. You have the basic business of distraction. Option one, distracting from the Jeffrey Epstein files. Option two, distracting from the situation in Ukraine, which is a little bit more sophisticated as a theory, but nonetheless credible. Option number three is that Marco Rubio was right when he simply said we had to do it because Netanyahu was going to do it, and we knew that Iran would respond, and we wanted to respond to Iran's response to Netanyahu before they responded to us. And then, of course, the very next day, he denied that he'd said that. Unfortunately for him, it was on tape. But we live in a world where that no longer matters, any more than it matters that Boris Johnson left Downing Street in disgrace. James Cleverly wanted to come back and have another go and thinks that today he's somehow qualified to critique Keir Starmer. It is because of the looming midterms and his tanking popularity levels that Donald Trump went to war in Iran, because he thought somehow that it would improve his standing. It can't be over very easy and be a great success, which he'll claim anyway, even as it continues to be an epic failure. He'd claim a big success and his voters would be so stupid they'd go along with it. Number five, regime change, which held true until roughly the moment that they replaced the last Ayatollah with the new one, his son. Human rights abuses, concern for the Iranian people. That's the one, isn't it? That's the one that makes you go, really? A couple of times this week, Eleanor and I have looked at each other and gone, what the hell is wrong with these people? Including people that we have the great pleasure and privilege of working alongside. What the hell is wrong with these people? And I think of all the things that would demonstrate just how utterly bent they are intellectually and morally, it would have to be the claim that Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu are going to bomb Iran because they care about the Iranian people. We're only going back a week and a half to hear that coming out of these speakers through this microphone. Oh, yes, they care deeply about the Iranian people. You don't have to worry about international law because the Iranians have broken international law. The human rights abuses visited upon the Iranian people provide the perfect moral justification for us to bomb Iran back to the Stone Age. And they actually said these things out loud, give or take a few verbs and nouns. And now the polar opposite is true, which is why the Daily Mail can't bring itself to mention the bloody thing until page 10 of today's newspaper. You've got to stay angry. You don't stay angry, everything gets worse. And, of course, if it continues to get worse, then at least by being angry, you stayed honest. But here it is. Everybody looking the other way. Everybody channeling Basil Fawlty. Everybody pretending that 10 minutes ago they weren't calling for the thing that has turned out to be absolutely disastrous, to be joined by Keir Starmer. So, that's number six, the idea that they cared about the Iranian people. If you signed up for that one, then please give me your phone number because I've got a bridge to sell you. Number seven, follow the money. It's all about the Benjamins, the money, the oil, the cash, the moolah. Could be that. Could be that. I mean, there is a theory, and it is entirely a theory, utterly unevidenced, that someone just gave him a ton of money. They had a quick whip around the Middle East, raised $10 billion, stuck it in a secret bank account in Cyprus, and it's going to be the Trump's family fortune for generations to come. Absolutely unevidenced. No support for that idea whatsoever. But the thing about vacuums is that when they're created, anything can move into it. That the more perceivable option under it's all about the Benjamins would simply be that people are making a ton of money out of this war, and it's the same people that always do. The arms manufacturers and in this occasion, the fossil fuel vampires. Donald Trump actually said yesterday, even if things carry on like this, we are going to make a lot of money. And as I mentioned earlier, when he said we, he did not mean you or me or any of the people that are minded to vote for him. Number eight, he wants to actually call off the midterms using the war as an excuse. Number nine, distract from Ukraine, which is similar to the distracting from the Epstein, but different enough to merit a slot all of its own. And number 10, he is just bored. He is just bored. It could be that. Anthony sent me a message. He says, I can't stay angry. I'm just so tired. And that's something that I want to speak about next. Because Ian Dunt makes a superb point in his superlative Substack this morning. And you can actually hear him reading it as well if you click on the relevant icon. And he talks about why we like conspiracy theories. Okay? Now, don't at me to tell me that you don't like conspiracy theories. You understand the seductive nature of a conspiracy theory. The one thing we discover when we talk to conspiracy theorists, whether it's about vaccines, whether it's about wars, or whether it's about lizards running the country, is that they allow people to pretend that the world is not as chaotic as it actually is. Life, as I think Thomas Hobbes said, is nasty, brutish, and short. The human existence is nasty, brutish, and short. I don't agree with him about that, but it is a way of highlighting the chaotic nature of our existence. So a conspiracy theory, the world is secretly run by lizards. The world is secretly run by Jews. I mean, the most hideous anti-Semitic conspiracy theory of them all. They appeal to people, sometimes even people possessed of some intelligence, because they are a preferable alternative to the obvious chaos that underpins humanity, right? And that is why you sign up for a narrative that an evil cabal is responsible for all the bad things that happen. The simplification helps people like Anthony. I can't stay angry anymore, but my nerves are jangling. So I need to understand what's going on. And the answer is, well, the world is run by a secretive cabal. The royal family are actually lizards. The Jews are pulling the strings of the entire world. These are the oldest conspiracy theories of all, and in the case of the final one, the most anti-Semitic. And you can understand why people are drawn to these, because the alternative is to believe in chaos. And that's what's happening now. This is the point Ian Dunt makes so brilliantly this morning. The people that subscribed to conspiracy theories in the past were either kooky, these are his words, or foolish, and he doesn't make the point about the anti-Semitic conspiracy theory, because those words are not adequate to describe people who sign up to that hideous doctrine. But it's people who are afraid of the chaos of the world, who are settling for something that's a bit like a conspiracy theory, but much more prosaic, much more easy to digest. They are signing up to the idea that Donald Trump possesses reason. We've all done it. Even those of us who've been crystal clear about what a hideous character he is. We've all done it. We are projecting reason onto Donald Trump. And he doesn't have any. It is, the White House is, in the words of Ian, an effing madhouse. So what do we do then? I mean, what do we do then? What do we do then? You and I every day. There's a war going on. We can't be the Daily Mail and pretend that there isn't until page 10 of the newspaper, because that would be a disgusting betrayal of our listeners and our consciences. But if Donald Trump is literally insane, if there is absolutely no semblance of conventional reason in any of his thinking. He is driven. Another brilliant writer who I admire enormously is a writer called Edward Docks, D-O-C-X. He hasn't been doing much journalism lately because he's been busy writing episodes of Slow Horses, which gives you an idea of just what a gifted bloke he is. He's a very old pal of mine. And he wrote a piece about Trump, I told you at the time, typifying him as an ogre. The way you understand him is an ogre. He is nothing but a collection of insatiable appetites. Women, money, food, beef burgers, applause, praise, give me more. It's all I can do and sense. And we sit here trying to make sense of an ogre who exists solely to feed his hideous and insatiable appetites. I am Trump. I am hungry. War. Money. Praise. Stick my name on the Kennedy Center. Drop some bombs on Iran. Dance in front of an adoring crowd. Even though I look like a Muppet, they'll pretend that I'm Michael Jackson. It's incredible. Give me the Nobel Peace Prize. And if you don't, I'll bomb the Middle East. Give me the FIFA Peace Prize. Remove everybody from the room who will reflect how ridiculous I am, because I am Trump. And I am magnificent. I am the naked emperor, of course, as an earlier caller pointed out. But if you could have killed that boy in the crowd shouting that the emperor was naked, he'd still be marching around the place taking the praise and the plaudits from the people complimenting him on the quality of his schmutter. How do we deal with that if it's true? If Trump is just a collection of insatiable appetites who does not deploy reason in any of his decisions and has started a war because... And that is the end of the sentence. Why has Donald Trump started a war? Because he has. Why are you expecting more, James? Because I have to. I can't not expect more. I can't subscribe to a worldview that portrays the most powerful man in it as a collection of insatiable, insane appetites. Why has he started a war? Because he has. This isn't traditional phone-in territory, is it? What the hell are you going to ring in and tell me now? How do we navigate a world in which Donald Trump is just mad? A collection of insane and insatiable appetites. Ozymandias, as a couple of you have rather intelligently pointed out. So, I suppose, because I do want to hear your thoughts on this, although, as you can tell, I'm in one of those moods where I'm more than happy to continue sharing mine until about a week next Wednesday. Is this the winner? Is Ian Dunt right? Is the actual answer to the question not anything vaguely intelligent, nuanced, or detailed? It's got nothing to do with Jeffrey Epstein. It's got nothing to do with Benjamin Netanyahu. It's got nothing to do with the looming midterms or the nature of the regime in Iran or the human rights abuses that that regime has undertaken or the money that will be made or the oil that will be sold or the midterms that will be cancelled or the war in Ukraine and the will and the desires of Vladimir Putin or perhaps the final caller got closest, the boredom of Trump. It's more than boredom. An insane, insatiable collection of appetites, and we all sit here trying to analyse it. As if he's lying on a couch and we're sitting here sucking our pen with our notebook in our hand going, oh, tell me about your relationship with your mother. There is none. There's no reason there. It's as if a computer had created a creature consisting entirely of greed and appetite. And what if that's the answer? What if that's the answer? Now, I'm going to ask you to do me a little favour now. Can you help me turn this into a phone-in? Because it isn't, is it? What if that's the answer? What if Trump is just appetite? What if he is just feeling with no fact, sentient but utterly impermeable to reason? He is just a conglomerate of hungers. What do we do then? 0345 6060 973.
LBC.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting is changing.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 26 minutes after 11. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where happily nobody pretends otherwise now. The idea that this war Donald Trump is waging in Iran would somehow be a good idea has been entirely abandoned. I suppose you should credit Andrew Neil and people like that for having the, is it brass neck or is it actually the decency to admit? Well, they haven't admitted they got it horribly wrong. They've just started writing articles about how wrong it is. His colleague Richard Littlejohn instead has started writing articles about lollipop ladies rather than admit how wrong he was. So I'd rather have the idiot who can at least implicitly acknowledge how wrong they've been. I'd rather have him than the idiot who can't. I just think it's a little bit healthier. But the bigger question of why Trump trumps, that's a horrible one to contemplate, because if it's true that we're wasting our time trying to come up with reasons for him doing anything, then what do we do with our time? How do we navigate this world together if the most powerful man in it is beyond reason if he is just a madman. David's in Dundee. David, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Thanks for also having me on. I think your list earlier on, your sort of the reasons why Trump may have done this, I think it's probably two or three things on that list, and I can't remember exactly what they were off the top of my head, but I remember thinking three and four were likely to be the reasons. But I think you've also got to view it through the prism of the fact that he's not up for re-election. So he is completely off the leash.
Not yet. I don't think he's given up on the idea of having another go.
No, he probably hasn't. But again, as unlikely as that is, I should think he's... And I think that also explains the general Maduro thing with Venezuela, the whole carry on with Greenland and Denmark. And I think he's just genuinely not worried about what anyone thinks anymore. He's like, I'm just going to do what I want and nobody can stop me. And I'm just...
But he was restrained during the first term by people around him who at least when they held up mirrors, that they reflected reality and truth back to him. Now the people around him hold up.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing as well. He's just surrounding himself with people who are there just to say yes to him and implement whatever it is that he wants to do. I mean, Kristi Noem would still be in charge of her department if she hadn't sort of thrown Trump under the bus.
Yeah.
With her advert saying, you know, so they were literally there just to sort of say yes to Trump. They're not there because of any kind of competence or skill or...
But what do we do then? I mean, what if my friend Ian Dunt is right? And what if my friend Edward Dox is right? And that he is... And what if my friend Lewis Goodall is right, who I think recently described Donald Trump as a wriggling bag of uncontrollable urges? What if they're all right? And this isn't your problem, David. I don't know what you do for a living, but you probably don't do this, do you, what I'm doing?
No.
What do we do with ourselves if it's absolutely pointless trying to work out what's going on? Because all that you can ever say is that, and Orwell gets close to this, and Joseph Heller gets close to this, the reason there's a war is because there's a war.
Your producer asked me the same question, and I was as unsure then as I am now, unfortunately.
I'm not going to go through this alone.
I think we need to just stand up to, not stand up, well, stand up to Trump's maybe wrong, maybe, but stick by our own morals. If we think what he's doing is wrong, we need to call it out as wrong. And a lot of European countries are doing that better than we are at the moment.
We're doing it pretty well, I think. And I know there's an opportunity to give Starmer a kicking. But if you go through the Chilcot checklist, the two decisions he made, one to not join the war, but two to respond to the attacks upon air bases where we have personnel. I don't think he had the Spanish option of sitting on his hands at that point, personally.
No, and I agree with the way Starmer... dealt with that, and I disagree with the criticism he's come in, because if he'd done anything different, Farage and Badenoch would have taken the other side of the argument and attacked him that way anyway. You know, it wouldn't make any difference what he did, they were going to criticise. So I agree with what he did. But I think because we've had this special relationship with America in the past, we're a little bit less likely to stand up to Trump than maybe we should be.
Yeah.
But we need to remember that Trump's not permanent, he's only there for a short time, and we need a relationship with the US after he's gone. So we need to stand up to him and stick to our sort of guns whilst he's there.
And the problem is America isn't. I mean, it's as if there were a king across the water or a court that we could visit, you know, where containing the people who are the meaningful and viable opposition to Trump, and partly because of the nature of the American political system and partly because, sadly, of the disarray that the Democratic Party has been in now for at least one and a half electoral cycles, that there isn't another court. It's a bit like when the leader of the opposition is fated by a foreign leader because there's a chance that the leader of the opposition will become prime minister. There's nothing we can do as a country to keep that line of communication open because there's no leader in waiting in the United States of America from the other side of the political divide. And of course there's three sides now of the political divide. There is the Republicans, there is the Democrats, and there is the MAGA. And God forbid that the successor to Donald Trump is another member of the madhouse. It's unlikely because you probably need to be mad to run the madhouse. You probably need to be mad to be the leader of the madhouse. And the other men around him are pathetic and craven, sycophantic and racist, hideous, white supremacist. But they're not mad in the sense that Donald Trump is mad, which is what we're examining now. The question of what the hell do the rest of us do if he is just mad? Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
The US military says four crew members have died in a crash involving a refueling plane in western Iraq. Washington earlier said that it wasn't a result of hostile or friendly fire. The US says it'll loosen sanctions on other countries buying Russian oil in a bid to curb price rises due to the conflict in the Middle East. Iran has continued to target ships in the Gulf, and the Strait of Hormuz remains effectively closed. And official figures show the UK economy unexpectedly failed to grow in January. It followed growth of 0.1% in December. LBC weather: showers will linger across northern and western areas, drier and brighter in the south, a high of 10 degrees.
This is LBC.
You've probably been with the same energy supplier for decades. And why wouldn't you be? Loyalty matters. But lately, bigger hasn't always felt better. You've probably dealt with long waits and endless automated menus in search of someone who can actually help. Octopus Energy is now Britain's biggest energy supplier, trusted by over 8 million customers, because we do things differently. Our people focus on the most important thing, you. When you call, you'll speak to a real person. No robotic scripts, no computer says no, just an honest conversation with someone who actually wants to help. Join the millions who've already made the move. Octopus Energy, recommended by Which, a record 9 years running. Visit octopus.energy/better for verification.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
For GCSE and A-level success, one name stands out. Justin Craig. Small, tailored group tuition that really works. Justin Craig courses consolidate knowledge, boost confidence and improve technique for mocks, assessments and exams. Available in classrooms and online. One-to-one also available. With over 40 years' experience, Justin Craig has helped more than 100,000 students. For more details, visit justincraig.ac.uk. Justin Craig. Tailored for you.
If you were missold a home on a holiday park, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive compensation. Text ADVICE to 78900.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
It is 25 minutes to 12 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I think a little bit of Idiot's Corner. What do you do if you're a Donald Trump fan and you're watching this unfold? What on earth do you cling to or sign up for as a way of avoiding the fact that you're... And I presume most people are following the Daily Mail's lead and to be more precise, they're following Basil Fawlty's lead. So if I were to be stuck in a lift with you and I said, hey, aren't you the guy who last week was attacking Keir Starmer for not joining Donald Trump's war? Where are you today?
Don't mention the war.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So that would be the only sort of vaguely sustainable position to adopt. Nobody's really pretending that it's a good idea, although Nigel Farage tells the Financial Times this morning that Donald Trump is right about Iran, which is an utterly meaningless comment, given that he wouldn't be able to tell you what exactly it is that Donald Trump is doing in Iran or why. But I don't know what an entrant, an applicant to Idiot's Corner would actually look like. So I'll have a look in either this junction or during the next break. I'll have a little look through my inbox and see if we've got anybody who is thick enough or corrupt enough or racist enough to still be pretending that Donald Trump is embarked upon a wise course, or that it isn't the single most important subject facing the country at the moment. Because that's your choice, isn't it? You either don't mention it at all, which is channeling Basil Fawlty.
Don't mention the war.
Or you go full Daily Mail, which is just ignore the fact that all your columnists were calling for it until 10 minutes ago, and don't even mention the war until page 10 of the newspaper. Or you just stick your fingers in your ears and you go la 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 la. Or, of course, you get James Cleverly on your programme to talk about Peter Mandelson. Without mentioning Boris Johnson, which would be an extraordinary path to follow as well. But the alternative is shame and humiliation. I'm thinking of Andrew Neil, the way in which there is no shame and no humiliation for people anymore. My American friends keep asking if Britain's lost its marbles after Starmer snubbed Trump on Iran. Sadly, there's only one answer, wrote Andrew Neil about a week ago. And then yesterday, that Trump started the attacks on Iran without even having the semblance of a plan to keep the Strait of Hormuz open is both a mystery and a scandal from which he might not recover politically. You know which sound effect we need now, Keith, don't you?
It's, don't mention the war.
No, it's not that one. It's the ferret, isn't it? It's got to be the ferret. It's got to be the... What's it called again? Duking, deeking, dinking? We've got to be the ferret. You go in a week from saying, my American friends keep asking if Britain's lost its marbles after Starmer snubbed Trump on Iran. Sadly, there's only one answer. And then a week later, you are literally describing that war, which Starmer must have lost its marbles over, Britain must have lost its marbles over for not joining in, as being both a mystery and a scandal from which Donald Trump might not recover politically. It's not quite as humiliating as Richard Littlejohn going from explaining that he's never been more ashamed to be British to literally writing about lollipop ladies, because the alternative would be to acknowledge what an absolute weapon he's been over this issue. Again, caveat, I mean, he's always a weapon over every issue. Sometimes it's hideous, sometimes it's just thick. But my goodness me, the phrase reverse ferret seems strangely inadequate, doesn't it? Thank goodness we've got a sound effect. Have you ever heard a ferret? In the, it's gone a bit north-north at digital now, hasn't it? I mean, that is, what was that? An extraordinary tirade depicting Donald Trump in fascinating fashion. And then 4 minutes later, I'm asking you if you've ever heard a ferret in the wild. But anyway, if you haven't, this is what they sound like. So if you want to get the idea of a reverse ferret, just imagine that noise with one of those beeping noises that lorries make when they're reversing. So that would be like a reverse ferret. So I'll it's been a long week. I need to have a bit of fun sometimes. You do the ferret, I'll do the lorry. Beep, beep, beep. That was a reverse ferret. It sounded very similar to the world's smallest violin, didn't it, that we got out on last week's programme. Let's go to Estonia. Nick is there. Nick, what would you like to say, if you can remember?
Well, I think, going back to your reasons why, I think the strongest analogy you made was the ogreish appetite, to be honest.
Yeah, it's not mine. It's Edward Dock's. I can recommend the article. The headline is Fee-Fi-Fo-Trump, How an Ogre Won Back the White House, and it was published in The Guardian in January of last year.
Okay. All right. Well, going back to that, I think there's no argument that the guy's impulsive, and so if impulsiveness is how he operates, then you're really going to struggle to find underlying reasons for it, or rather long-standing reasons, beyond things like, I don't know, owning Obama or something like that further down the line, if he can fix Venezuela when the other one couldn't, things like that. That, to my mind, is probably the strongest candidate. And I think the other benefits, whether it's postponing the Epstein files or making money, just play into that. But I wouldn't say there's much more.
Yeah, I mean, you know, retrospect is a wonderful thing, 2020 hindsight. The idea that we would somehow keep him sweet by giving him a state visit is a consequence of thinking that he has reason, thinking that there is a relationship between A and B, or A to Z. We do X, Y will follow. But if you're dealing with an ogre, you've fed his appetite. And that's it now. He's gone. He's fed his appetite. Thank you. State visit. I am Trump. I am honoured. And then 24 hours later, he hates you again if it suits him. If his appetite needs hatred, he's going to attack Keir Starmer. And he does. He compares him to Churchill unfavourably.
Well, I mean, in that sense, giving him the things that he wants is not really any different to giving Putin the thing that he wants.
I think you're absolutely right. And it leaves the poor old king in a right old pickle, doesn't he? Because he's supposed to be going there next month. And everyone who will write, and if they haven't already, they will. Simon Jenkins probably has already, will write about how the king needs to go to America because we need to keep Donald Trump. But of course, if he is an ogre, possessed only of appetites, then sending the king to visit him is just feeding him again.
Well, I think that in that respect, I think, was it a caller? I was on the phone, so I heard the radio, but I wasn't too sure who it was. There was someone who mentioned talking about how America is permanent, but Trump is temporary.
Yeah.
And I think if we act with that in mind, we don't have to actively try and sabotage America, but we don't necessarily have to tomorrow, basically.
No, we don't need to bend the knee for Trump, because that's the point. Bending the knee is I mean, it's a compromise. It's often seen as cowardly. But you bend the knee as a pragmatic calculation on what's actually best for you. So bending the knee is historically an act of self-interest. But if you're bending the knee for somebody who doesn't recognize any interests but his own, then you are debasing yourself for no reason. Which brings us back to the royal visit, actually, which we haven't talked about much this week. I think we ended last week talking about it. And the fact that, once again, Vladimir Putin is going to be absolutely delighted with the way that everything is going. And we're sitting here trying to make sense of a world in which the Secretary of State for Defense in the United Kingdom warns that Vladimir Putin is helping Iran and Donald Trump is helping Vladimir Putin, even as he helps Iran attack Americans. Four more Americans coming back in body bags. And Donald Trump's just written checks for Vladimir Putin by lifting sanctions, which were already pretty pathetic, on their oil industry. Thank you, Nick. Actually, if you're in Estonia, I shouldn't let you go without asking about the ramifications of the Putin angle. And I mean, what the lifting of sanctions on Russia will mean in your part of the world.
Well, it's certainly alarming, because at the end of the day, it does seem like the only lesson that either Trump or Putin will ever understand is a bloody nose.
Yes.
And at the moment, the belligerence is being rewarded rather than nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, it's beautifully put for both of them. Go on, sorry.
No, it's highly frustrating that you've got this short-term attitude that Trump's demonstrating. Well, his short-term ability, I think, is really what we would call it. And that's going to have potential ramifications for people living in this part of the world.
Yes, it is. And I mean, it almost empowers Putin, who's actually having a relatively terrible time of it at the moment at the hands of Volodymyr Zelensky and the Ukrainian people. But, of course, this is going to be an epic distraction from that as well. So all 10 reasons can be true, but they are not actually the reasons why Donald Trump has gone to war. That's two questions there. So if I had said to you, what will the war achieve? It could achieve all 10 of these things. It could literally distract from Epstein. It could keep Netanyahu sweet. It could improve his popularity. Spoiler alert, it won't. It could effect meaningful regime change. Spoiler alert, it hasn't. It could help the Iranian people. Spoiler alert, yeah, you know the rest. It could raise a lot of money. Spoiler alert, it has. It could give him grounds for cancelling the midterms. It might. It could distract from Ukraine. It has. It could temporarily alleviate his boredom. It has. So all of those things could be true. Except the ones that aren't. But none of them would be the reason why he did it, because the reason why he did it is the reason why he goes to the lavatory, or the reason why he fills his face with cheeseburgers, or the reason why he grabs women by their genitals, because he wants to. And in that moment, if he wants to, he has to.
Hey, smart speaker. Play LBC.
Good morning, I'm Nick Ferrari. It's time to get to your calls.
First time caller. A little bit nervous.
Thanks for taking my call.
They have no Navy, they have no Air Force, and they have no leadership. We could call it a tremendous success right now, or we could go further, and we're going to go further.
Hear every side of the story.
Why do people think that Trump wants to bring democracy to Iranians while he's dismantling democracy in his own country?
There is a general feeling within our government that defence is something that we have to vastly up because of what's happening in the world, and they will find a way of doing it.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. LBC, leading Britain's conversation.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties, mess, tantrums and sleepless nights, all those yo-yos, action figures and shinies, lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere, for each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest, you probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
Right, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life?
Sunday Leaguers! Dog lovers! Bait clubbers! Banger dancers! Baby ravers! Potters! Whether you walk it, jog it, or run it, go all in against cancer. All in to help fund life-saving research. Sign up to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event from just $14.99. Search Race for Life. Prices vary by event distance and participant age.
A message from TfL.
I saw Alicia's photo in my newsfeed. All I can think of is her family. How they're getting on. If they're getting on. I didn't look when I pulled out, and she never made it home. Sounds crazy, but it felt like her motorbike came out of nowhere. But I know the truth. I didn't look again.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
For GCSE and A-level success, one name stands out. Justin Craig. Small, tailored group tuition that really works. Justin Craig courses consolidate knowledge, boost confidence and improve technique for mocks, assessments and exams. Available in classrooms and online. One-to-one also available. With over 40 years' experience, Justin Craig has helped more than 100,000 students. For more details, visit justincraig.ac.uk. Justin Craig. Tailored for you.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 11:48. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And I was wondering earlier, and to be honest, I had to search quite far back into the programme for this, but I have found an entrant for Idiot's Corner on a morning like this. What do you do if the love you have for Trump's racism, misogyny or climate change denial is so complete that even now you can't recognise the catastrophe that he's visited upon the Middle East? And thankfully, Paul Fleets, I don't know whether that's one word or two, in Sheffield has been in touch. He writes, James, why are you slagging Donald Trump off again? Why not have a topical debate about how thick your friend and ex-colleague David Lammy is by calling Cyprus a NATO country, but it will never happen? Well, Paul Fleets in Sheffield, let's begin with your definition of the word topical, because you are referring to something that happened a week ago today, so that would not be topical. Your definition of the word debate is in need of a bit of help as well, because what you describe actually happened, so there is no debate about whether or not David Lammy did accidentally describe Cyprus as a NATO country instead of a NATO ally, as he clarified himself just a couple of hours later. So it isn't topical, and it wouldn't be a debate. And David isn't a friend of mine. He did work here, but so did Katie Hopkins, mate. I don't know whether you'd be picking her as an example of somebody that I should be talking about. And finally, the question I'm really interested in, Paul Fleets in Sheffield, is why you want me to talk in a negative way about a black man on a day like today. What do you think it is about David Lammy that a week after an event in which he made a mistake that he swiftly corrected, you think it would be more important than talking about a war in the Middle East that has just seen four American soldiers coming home in body bags? What is it about David Lammy, Paul Fleets in Sheffield, that boils your blood so completely, do you think? Is it the fact he went to Harvard University? I should have double-checked that. Is it the fact that he's foreign secretary? Is it the fact that he presented a show on LBC for a while? Is it the fact that he made a mistake when describing Cyprus as a NATO country instead of a NATO ally? It's none of those things, is it? What do you think it is about David Lammy that Paul Fleets in Sheffield, who doesn't understand the word topical or the word debate or the word friend, what is it about David Lammy that makes him think we should be talking about how thick his word, not mine, David Lammy is on a day like today, instead of talking about the actual war that Donald Trump is currently undertaking? If you know Paul Fleets in Sheffield, then do ask him what it is about David Lammy that somehow has boiled his brain to such a degree that he's forgotten what topical means, forgotten what debate means, forgotten what friend means, and focused entirely on something about David Lammy that I can't quite put my finger on that really upsets and outrages Paul Fleets in Sheffield. Answers on a postcard, please. 11:50, and there is Idiot's Corner. So there was one person just itching to get in there. And I'll leave you to work out whether it's Donald Trump's racism, sexism, misogyny or climate change denial that most appeals to people like him. James is in Gloucester. James, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James. First time caller. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome.
I picked up the phone today. Well, first of all, just on bending the knee to Trump.
Yes.
I just think that we just need to completely abandon that idea now. I think it's becoming quite apparent that we are in the midst of a complete overhaul of the geopolitical system in the world. And I think that it's quite evident that America's power and influence is waning. They're becoming weaker by the day. Nobody's taking them seriously.
I don't know that I agree with you. I think Donald Trump is all of those things, but America is still America. The United States is still the United States, and it will still be there when he's long gone, and it will still be the most powerful military force on the planet, or the second most, probably the most.
True. I mean, that is true, but I just feel like a lot of American military power is projected power, so the illusion of this sort of invincibility.
Yeah.
And I think with this debacle in Iran and the way that it's going, it's just sort of like poking holes, and people are starting to see through that facade. And I just think it's terribly damaging to their reputation. And I think China and Russia are quite happy to sit back and let it happen. And, you know, it's just with the moving of military equipment out of South Korea, Japan, apparently out of the Baltic states now, and things like that. I just don't think it's it's just not showing strength.
So I mean, you're taking the question very seriously, as mm-hmm. I would hope everybody is. But you're really going into detail on how you respond to the fact that Trump is Trump, whether or not mm-hmm. we think he's a sort of morass of insatiable appetites or something even worse doesn't matter. It's what he has mm-hmm. done to the United States, and what he's shown can always be done to the United States that should inform mm-hmm. our movement, I presume, closer to Europe, or finding a sort of alliance of like-minded countries that would offer up an alternative to the hegemony that Trump has represented over the years, or America has represented.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was just about to say. I think I used to think of myself as British first and foremost, but as time goes on, I'm starting to think of myself as European, because I think we need to be more collaborative with our European partners. I think Europe needs to stand on its own two feet and get serious about its own defence and its own place in the world. And I don't think that Britain is big enough and, you know, sort of strong enough to do that on its own. I think we need to do it collectively. And we need to stop, you know, depending on the systems, you know, the stuff like payment systems and things like that we rely so heavily on the US for.
We need to
get away from that, because we're so reliant on them that when we find ourselves in a position like this, where we've got an American president that doesn't take us seriously, is quite happy to inflict pain on us, we're sort of left high and dry, because we haven't got their systems are deeply embedded in our country and in Europe. You know, for example, you know, the NHS and our military, they use, you know, American AI services, servers, all that kind of stuff.
Palantir, of course, inveigling their way into the British infrastructure in ways that a lot of people, I think, including Carol Cadwallader, who's been proved right about pretty much everything in the last 10 years, have been warning about. I saw, I think, their CEO on a clip yesterday, looking borderline unhinged. So, I mean, whether or not we should be throwing open the door and rolling out the red carpet for these characters is another question. Linked to everything. Say again?
It's very scary.
It is quite scary. And, of course, some things are too scary to think about, which is why we embrace either a conspiracy theory, because it's a sort of reassuring alternative to chaos, or, as we seem to have done with Donald Trump, and I'm guilty of this, as is, I think, pretty much everybody except Ian Dunt this morning, we're all trying to analyse, we're all trying to rationalise, we're all trying to explain and understand. What if you can't explain and understand Trump? And that immediately puts the state visit in my mind. There'll be a million other examples, some of which will be even better, but we worked so hard to believe that the state visit was a good idea, because we knew what Trump was, and whether you're a royalist or not, you can see the king as the embodiment of Britain, whether you like that or not. It would involve Britain debasing itself in order to curry favour with Donald Trump. But what if you can't curry favour with Donald Trump, because he isn't built that way? He is just going to veer from one appetite to the next, to the next, to the next. And that is why you almost, under James's rather brilliant analysis just there, you almost cut him out of the picture altogether and start governing. And I don't know that Starmer has got the skill set for this, to explain to the British people that you are now pursuing a path that is going to effect generational change, and that the United Kingdom's proximity to the United States of America is consigned to the history books. We now look east instead of west, or north. I mean, you know, we now look for alliances and bonds that recognise the A bit of NATO has effectively been taken off the board. I think he's probably right, but I don't think that we are capable of absorbing fully the scale of the sea change that that would entail, the scale of the sea change that that would demand. And you know, if you ever think that we are, or I am, or you are, exaggerating the seriousness of the moment, then stories like that juxtaposition in today's bulletin should give you a bit of a wake-up call. John Healey, the Secretary of State for Defence, has warned that Vladimir Putin is helping Iran attack American and British positions. Donald Trump has decided to lift sanctions on Russian oil so that Vladimir Putin can fill his pockets as a direct consequence. Vladimir Putin has been given permission to profiteer from Donald Trump's war in Iran by Donald Trump. Go on, stick that through your mangle. Vladimir Putin has been given permission to profiteer from Donald Trump's war in Iran by Donald Trump. No wonder the Daily Bloody Mail doesn't mention anything until page 10 today, and even then offers up an analysis of how catastrophic everything is going without mentioning that they were all in favour of it 10 minutes ago. No wonder Kemi Badenoch is claiming that she never said that Keir Starmer should have been joining this war when we all heard her say that. No wonder James Cleverly is touring studios this morning, having his toes tickled by client journalists, talking about Peter Mandelson instead of Keir Starmer's brilliant decision not to join the war. They were all attacking him for not joining last week. Donald Trump has given permission to Vladimir Putin to profiteer from Donald Trump's war in Iran. That was well done, Keith. I like that. Sounds almost like we planned it. Again, you know, I ended the last hour, or began the last hour, by saying, how do you turn that into a phone-in? And I don't know. But go on, look me in the eye and tell me that's not an absolutely chilling observation. Donald Trump has given Vladimir Putin permission to profiteer from the war that Donald Trump is waging in Iran, even while Vladimir Putin continues to pursue his criminal and illegal war against the people of Ukraine in the sovereign territory of Ukraine. And now we'll have a phone in about trying to work out what Donald Trump's motivation is for doing that, except we won't anymore, will we? But we still don't know what we'll do instead.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, the United States military says four crew members have died in a crash involving a refueling plane in western Iraq. Six people were on board. Rescue efforts are continuing. LBC's correspondent Ollie Barrett, who's in the Iraqi city of Erbil, is following developments.
US officials say they are still investigating the exact nature of what happened and will provide further details when they have more. There's not much more they're saying beyond that, except to dispute that this was a plane that was shot down. The Americans say this was not a hostile fire incident or even a friendly fire incident. We do know there was another plane involved, another American plane involved in some way. That one managed to land safely.
The US says it will loosen sanctions on other countries buying Russian oil in a bid to curb price rises due to the conflict in the Middle East. Iran has continued to target ships in the Gulf, and the Strait of Hormuz remains effectively closed. Separately, the Chancellor Rachel Reeves will meet fuel and energy bosses this afternoon to discuss soaring oil prices. Council has lost a legal challenge to overturn a ruling dismissing attempts to stop a hotel in Essex from being used to house asylum seekers. Epping Forest District Council wanted to appeal a decision by the High Court not to grant an injunction. LBC's East of England reporter Shivani Sharma is following developments.
This was really the last opportunity for Epping Council to try and stop the Bell Hotel from housing asylum seekers, a fight which has cost the council no less than £500,000. But it ultimately failed to convince judges both at the High Court and the Court of Appeal that the hotel owners breached planning laws by housing asylum seekers at the Bell Hotel.
Official figures show the UK economy unexpectedly failed to grow in January. The zero growth for the month was weaker than had been previously predicted. It followed growth of 0.1% in December. And the British tennis number one Jack Draper is out of the Indian Wells. He lost in straight sets in the tournament to Daniil Medvedev in the quarterfinals. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 11 at £10,316. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather. Showers lingering across northern and western areas, drier and brighter in the south. This afternoon, a cooler day, a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 12 is the time. I had two contenders for the final hour of the programme today, and I've decided which one I'm going to go with because it is more topical. It's more relevant to the situation in the Middle East, but it will affect a fairly severe gear change. We're going to be talking about Dubai. The other one I was going to look at was, I quite like, especially Fridays at 12, something a bit more light-hearted. The idea of a tattoo that you really regret. And the reason why I was going to talk about that is a story about, I think, a Russian bloke who had the logo for Domino's Pizza tattooed on his ankle in return for a promised 100 free pizzas a year for 100 years. I mean, you'd think about, I mean, when I was in my early 20s, I think I'd have been quite up for that. I love pizzas. So 100 years of free pizza in return for a tattoo. Had it. He's lost a court battle after the promotional offer was withdrawn. So 2018, 350 winners of a Domino's Forever campaign in which you receive 100 free pizza vouchers per year for 100 years. All you needed to do was get a tattoo of the company's logo on a visible part of your body and post the results on social media. He got it. But then 5 years later, they cancelled it entirely, announcing that the vouchers were no longer valid, but Domino's did offer to fund cover-up tattoos for participants. And he took them to court. He said, "I got sick of pizza, but obligations to customers have to be fulfilled." I love this guy. "I got sick of pizza, but obligations to customers have to be fulfilled. It's a matter of principle," he told a Moscow radio station in 2023. But 3 years later, on Wednesday, a district court ruled in the company's favour and rejected the disgruntled tattooed Moscow resident's appeal. I was going to use that, because I am Alan Partridge, to launch a phone in about tattoos that you really regret. And there's another story in the news today that takes us back to many, many years ago. So tattoos used to be one of my bugbears. I used to do phone-ins about why you should never let your children be taught by people who've got visible tattoos. Because I was an idiot, before anybody gets cross with me or sends in, I was an idiot. In many ways, I still am, but I was a much bigger idiot then than I am now. The other one that I used to talk about all the time that is also in the news today is not evidence that I was an idiot. I was right then, and I'm right now. London is considering an extra charge for SUV drivers to come in to the capital. Transport for London is looking at an increase in the number of 20 miles per hour zones and a cut to the speed limits on its fastest roads from 50 to 40, and also a possible extra charge, a possible surcharge for larger, heavier cars when they come into London. And that would have been a shoo-in for a phone-in on this programme when I started on LBC. In fact, it was probably my first hobby horse. I wasn't a very political animal when I started here. I'd done about 18 months on daytime TV when I had to have an argument every day with the other people in the studio, including Matthew Wright, of course, who will be with you on LBC this weekend. But I wasn't a very political animal. I was more into, like, you know, showbiz, culture, arts. Wanted to be a theatre critic when I first left university, or a book reviewer. I wasn't a very... You've radicalised. Your fault, you know, that I'm so political now. I did an event a couple of years ago when my last book came out with my old editor. A lovely woman, Rosie Boycott, Lady Boycott now, who was editor of the Daily Express and made me showbiz editor. And we're sitting on the stage at the Hay Literary Festival. And I've written How They Broke Britain, which, if you don't know, is a richly detailed account of how this country was betrayed and diminished by people like David Cameron, Boris Johnson, Paul Dacre, Rupert Murdoch, Nigel Farage, and a few others. And the first thing she said was, when did you get political then? She said, because when you were my showbiz editor, you'd never had anything to say about politics. I said, well, politics was quite boring then. And you gave me the choice between writing about Norman Lamont or writing about Norman Cook. And I chose Norman Cook, Fat Boy Slim to you. Because obviously that was a much more exciting world to be in than the world of politics at the time, in the sort of William Hague era of the Conservative Party, when it looked like Labour were going to be in power forever. And so it's your fault that I'm all political. And I wasn't a very political animal back then. So when I took the job on LBC, I almost welcomed this management decision we had that we should stop talking about the news. I don't know if you remember this. Adrian Charles touched on it yesterday in his brilliant Guardian column, when he remembered a colleague in the phone-in business being described as someone who just wanted to do phone-ins about what your favourite crisp flavour was. And Adrian opined that that would actually be quite a good phone-in. You know how my brain works. I would do a phone-in about why you can't have a favourite crisp flavour. Because even though you might think your favourite crisp flavour is salt and vinegar, there will be a moment in your life where you'd much rather have a packet of Skips or a cheese and onion. So I find the very concept of a favourite crisp flavour to be unconvincing. So that's the kind of phone-in I would do. Everyone else would do a phone-in about what your favourite crisp flavour was, and then everyone else would complain in quite a snobbish fashion about us doing such shallow things when we should be talking about the war in Iran. But I would have talked about the call for SUV drivers to face an extra charge to drive in London. It's before I developed my allergy to motoring topics. And it would have been okay. I mean, to be fair, if it wasn't for the other stories that are contenders for this hour, we may have done the SUVs. We may have pretended that it wasn't a motoring story and had some sort of conversation about why people drive these hideous vehicles. And now I realise that in a way, we are about to have that phone in. But it's not about SUVs. It's about living in Dubai. Is it the same impulse? What draws people to Dubai? 03456060973. It's a combination of greed and selfishness, right? I don't want to pay taxes. I don't want to worry about anybody else in society. I don't care about the terms and conditions in which the people who built my apartment live. Why do people drive SUVs? I don't care about pedestrians. I don't care about other road users. I don't want to worry about the terms and conditions under which other people live or drive or walk or cycle. I am in my enormous tank and I feel powerful and safe. Why do people want to move to Dubai? I am in my fancy flat and I feel powerful and, well, until this week I felt safe. Because that's why Dubai is in the news. It's one of the reasons why Dubai is in the news. Did you know that you could be jailed in Dubai for taking photos of missiles flying over your own head? Did you know that? I kid you not. The British Embassy in the United Arab Emirates has warned Britons in the region against breaking the country's laws by taking pictures or sharing images of the impact of Iranian missiles. A 60-year-old British man has been charged under cybercrime laws in Dubai after allegedly filming Iranian missiles over the city. This is the place that various freaks and weirdos have moved to while claiming that freedom of speech was under threat in Keir Starmer's Britain, and that the streets of London were so unsafe that you couldn't walk down the road wearing a £2 million watch without running the risk of being mugged. So all these freaks and weirdos moved to Dubai, where they are literally not allowed to take photographs of missiles that are flying in their direction. Let's just focus for a minute on those two or three points to get. Why did you move to Dubai? Oh, because I really hate the clampdown on freedom of speech in the United Kingdom and I feel unsafe there. Okay, so you've moved to a country where missiles are currently being fired at you and the government doesn't let you take pictures of them because their freedom of expression laws are so severe. It's almost a Stuart Lee routine, this, isn't it? And if you're listening, Stu, all right, mate, hope you're well. It's almost a Stuart Lee routine, this. Oh, you can't even take pictures of missiles in Dubai anymore without getting locked up, except it's true. Why did you move to Dubai? Freedom of speech. What's happened now? Oh, I just got sent to jail for taking a picture of a missile. Where was the missile? It was heading for my flat. Why else did you move to Dubai? Because it's really safe compared to London. So you've moved to a place where they're firing missiles at you because it was safer than London, and you're not allowed to take pictures of the missiles because you've moved to a place that had better freedom of speech than the place that you... I mean, how hard is it now, hand on heart, to muster up a single scintilla of sympathy for the types of freaks and weirdos that I'm describing, and traitors as well, because to move to a foreign country, to surrender your responsibilities as a taxpayer to the education system, to the health service, to the transport infrastructure that you have benefited from and your own children have benefited from, and if they don't stay in Dubai, they will benefit from in the future, but you just don't want to pay your share, so you're going to move to Dubai. And you're going to pretend that it's not just because of greed, it's because of freedom of speech when you don't have any. You are literally not allowed to post anything on social media that could disturb public security. And it's up to them what disturbs public security. And I had no idea that this was true. Listen, for the avoidance of doubt, I've got friends who have moved to Dubai, I've got a couple of mates who work there, and obviously not everybody who has moved there is a freak or an idiot. I categorically mean that, and I'm not just saying it because I'm worried about the messages I'll have on my phone when I get home or when I get off air later. But I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the people who have made a great play. So there's one of Farage's mates, isn't there? Candy. He's all over the Epstein files. And he is the treasurer of reform, and he's in Dubai while trying to sell a flat in this country for 175 million quid. And as the missiles flew, he said he felt safer. And you had this thought that, is he completely bonkers? Or is somebody, because he's rich enough not to need the money, nobody's going to be paying him for coming out with this claptrap. What on earth is he playing at? And then you actually learn, as I have learned this week and this week only, you actually learn that the regime in Dubai will lock you up if you say anything unpleasant about the place. Like, for example, oh, look, here's a missile that's heading towards my sitting room window. So whether or not that explains why someone would be well, to be fair, if you've signed up to Nigel Farage's party, then you're not exactly the sharpest knife in the drawer anyway. But how on earth you could report from a borderline war zone that you feel safer there than you do in London, while simultaneously trying to persuade someone to pay 175 million quid to buy an apartment in London that you're flogging. There's a level of stupid there that once again proves my theory that you don't need to be clever to make an awful lot of money in this world. You just need to be committed and greedy enough. But the notion that you can get locked up for it, fines, imprisonment, deportation, for taking pictures and posting images of things that are happening in front of you, while claiming, of course, as Farage's outfit constantly does, and there's that hideous Isabel Oakeshott woman as well, who's going out with one of them. She's moved there and been posting constantly about how there aren't any missiles, or if there are, they go to a different school. without and complaining about freedom of speech issues in this country, like they all do. And of course, it's Farage's outfit. I think she's going out with Tice. It's either Richard Tice or 30p Lee. I can't remember which one of them it is. But they invite that hideous woman onto the stage. Oh, and also they hate Muslims and Sharia law. Guess what? Spoiler alert, Dubai is a Muslim state and it lives under Sharia law. But they invite that hideous woman who wanted to set fire to refugees while they were sleeping in their bed onto the stage because she's a free speech warrior. And they're not allowed. They're living in a country where they're not allowed to post a picture of a bomb that's heading for their head. It's literally flying over their own head. Take a picture, stick it on social media, get sent to jail. I've done it again. I can't exaggerate that. That's just true. That's what's happened. I'm standing in Dubai, writing for the Daily Telegraph about how awful the restrictions on free speech in the United Kingdom are and how unsafe London is. And I've moved to a country, and also how awful Muslims are. And I've moved to a country that's full of, oh, and God, Sharia law has been brought in by Sadiq Khan. And these are my people. This is what I spend my life on Twitter, courting and cultivating. Those sort of prejudices and bigotries. Muslims are awful. They're bringing in Sharia law. They, London is really, really unsafe. Freedom of speech is under threat. And I've moved to Dubai, where if a missile is flying over my head and I take a picture of it and put it on Twitter, I will go to jail. But Keir Starmer's stamping out our free speech and Sadiq Khan wants to bring in Sharia law. You live in a place that has Sharia law, and if you take a picture of a bomb as it flies over your head, they will put you in prison. What on earth is the phone in here? 17 minutes after 12 is the time. A couple of things, actually. I have got a phone. 21 people have been charged under the UAE's cybercrime laws for posting pictures and videos of missiles that are aimed at them. So, when you are in Dubai, and I do honestly accept and acknowledge that not everybody who's moved there is greedy and selfish. There are other reasons. In fact, it's an old pal of mine who used to work here who's moved there, and he's the least greedy, least selfish person that any of us have ever met. Unless he's got a big box of cream eggs in front of him, in which he could quite happily eat every single one without any help or support. So I've got a lovely friend who's out in Dubai, and he is neither greedy nor selfish, except with cream eggs. And he will not be alone. I got other friends who've moved there for various reasons. What was his record? Did he do 10 in one go? He did 10 cream eggs in one go once. So just, I miss him so much. He was such a good force for fun in the, and anyway, not greedy, not selfish, lives in Dubai, right? But the public figures, the so-called influencers who have been politicising their decision to be selfish and greedy by claiming that this country, our home, the United Kingdom, London, is somehow unsafe or that their free speech is under threat from a country where missiles are being fired at them and they will be sent to prison for posting a picture of those missiles. There should be no way back for these people, should there, to I don't know, respectability or public profile. If you've done this thing, you've maligned your own country and attacked Muslims while demonising Sharia law and claiming that London is unsafe and lying about free speech being under threat while lionising a woman that wanted to burn refugees to death in their own beds. And you've moved to this country where you will be in prison if you post a picture of a missile that has been aimed at you. I don't know what the word is to describe you. And I can't do that as a phone-in because of Ofcom, can I? What word would you use to describe the people that I have just described to you? You can't come on the radio and say that word. Now, I know, fair play to you, it's entirely accurate, but you can't say that word on the radio. Or that one. Oh, and you certainly can't say that one. But what else do you do? So, when you're in Dubai, how aware are you of what an extraordinarily repressive regime it is? 0345 6060973. That's all I want to know. I have a little bit of fun, but I'm not that person anymore. I'm not going to make the phones ring by saying that everybody in Dubai is a greedy tax-avoiding fraud. Categorically not. And I don't mean it, and I don't say it. But I do want to know, given that we've just painted a rather compelling picture of the fact that if you're on that side of politics, claiming that it's a wonderful refuge from attacks on free speech and safety, you've been rendered truly and irredeemably ridiculous, but it won't affect your employability at the Daily Telegraph comment pages or the Daily Mail, I'm sure, so don't panic. How aware are you of just how repressive and strict the regime is when you're there? That's all I want to know. 0345 6060 973. It's 12:21.
This is LBC.
Have you lost money to an investment, crypto platform or trading app that seemed genuine at first? Has your bank refused your claim or only refunded part of your loss? At Key Law, we specialise in the recovery of funds lost to investment fraud. Find out in minutes whether you may have a case at keylaw.co.uk. Expert legal guidance made simple. Key Law is authorised and regulated by the SRA. You can complain to your bank or the Financial Ombudsman for free. T's and C's apply.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato,
whoa,
and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall, proud partner of Team GB.
And you're right, I missed it. It's up there, isn't it, with the time I ask you to phone in if you haven't got a phone. Because if you are in Dubai, or if you are hoping to ever go back to Dubai, then you can't tell me the truth about Dubai. Full stop. Next phone in. Give me a ring if you've never had a phone. Give me a ring if you haven't got a phone. Give me a ring and tell me about how repressive it is in Dubai. You can only do that if you're never going to go back to Dubai. I don't know if they'd keep a list and you'd turn up at the airport and say, hang on a minute, are you the Simon in Dover that rang James O'Brien in March of 2026 and said that you can't say boo to a goose in Dubai without getting locked up? Because if you are, we're going to lock you up. I mean, there's a certain symmetry to that. It's almost Joseph Heller-esque, isn't it, in its complexity. But there is a danger that I have set up a phone in that is, by definition, impossible. But that's never stopped me before, except that one time when I changed my mind and didn't do a phone in about what it's like not to have a phone. Shall I shut up and take some calls? OK. Simon is in Dover. Simon, what would you like to say?
Hello, James. I was listening to your preamble. I must admit, I was very, very angry.
Yes.
My daughter has lived in Dubai for the last 7 years. She's not an influencer. She's worked in the financial sector. She's not a freak. She's not a weirdo. She's not a traitor. And she doesn't own a car. So I'd like to put the record straight on that one, first of all.
I did already do that. Not with direct reference to your daughter.
Halfway you did.
Well, I didn't mention the car, because I don't know her personally. But I did point out that I've got friends and colleagues, former colleagues, who are there, who are lovely, lovely people. And they're there for perfectly reasonable reasons. But they don't write for newspapers or go all over social media claiming that freedom of speech in this country is somehow in mortal danger, mm-hmm, or that London is so unsafe that you can't go to the theatre without having your trousers stolen.
No, that's true. I mean, basically, just a little bit of background. My daughter, yes, got her degree. She worked in London in the financial sector in a house share. Basically, the rent was extortionate. There was four other young professionals living there with her. Two females, two males. There was one bathroom in the property, so they had to give each other a 15-minute window, each one before they all went off to work.
Yes,
and so actually,
it's
she
a familiar
decided
picture. Of course, she did. Of course,
she decided as a young person that I want to make my life better by working hard, and Dubai was an opportunity for a young person to go and try and make their lives better.
And I'm all
and
for
I think
that.
It's just awful. I'm
all
the
for
way
that.
These people are being portrayed.
Well, no, because they're not. We're not portraying your daughter as being like that because she doesn't tick any of the boxes that we've been describing all morning. But if she did take a picture of a missile that was heading towards her apartment, God forbid, she'd be sent to prison.
Yes, I mean, that is a fact. I mean, that's a simple
did you
fact
know
of
that
the life there.
Before this
oh, yeah,
week?
Of course I did, yeah. Yeah.
So what? I mean, to be fair, I don't have a daughter
you
there.
Have to, you know, it's that old saying, you know, when in Rome, do as the Romans. And you take the rough with the smooth. It's certainly no paradise, but it certainly had, up until the last 10 days, some great advantages.
Yes,
and
pros and cons.
People taking malicious pleasure as it falls apart.
No, some people might be, but I also think it's, I mean, my animus here is pretty clear. I am directing my malice, which is probably a fair word, at the hideous traitors who have posted from Dubai that freedom of speech in this country is under threat and that safety on the streets of my city is so bad that they'd rather be in a war zone than in Knightsbridge. Those are the people that I'm cross with. Of course, what I can't do...
Well, they're just idiots, aren't they?
Well, yes, but they've got a much bigger voice in the British discourse than your daughter does.
Yeah. But I just wanted to put the...
Are you worried about her,
sure.
mate? No, I'm glad you have, course, and I recognise that.
Of course I am. I mean, yes. I'm her father, and I love her dearly, and we're in communication frequently, and it's a very difficult time. And I just have a lot of resentment to how people are being portrayed who live there.
Well, I don't want to push back too much, because obviously she's your daughter, and you're her dad, and you love her, and you're worried about her. But the... she will come back here at some point.
Of course.
And she will avail herself of all the things that taxpayers have been paying for while she's been in Dubai paying none.
No, but when she was, last 7 years, what has she had of the British tax money? Well, hasn't used the NHS.
And what has she paid for the NHS that she will use when she'll come back?
Well, when she comes back, she'll start paying, won't she?
Well, she'll be in an enormous profit there, won't she? Because
not necessarily. There's a lot of people who've never paid for the NHS who live in this country for 40, 50 years.
Well, two wrongs don't make a right, do they, Simon?
Well,
she'll be one of them when she comes back. She'll be one of the people that hasn't paid into the... She'll be one of the people that won't have paid into the NHS for 10 years. If she sends your grandchildren to state school, I will have paid for their education and she won't have chipped in at all.
Yeah, but at the moment, all I'm saying is that for the last 7 years, she's paid no UK tax, and she's had nothing off the UK government.
And all I'm saying is that she'll come back and retire here and expect a pension, and she'll be looked after. She'll avail herself of the NHS and she'll send her children to schools that I've paid for and she hasn't.
Well, she's got no children at the moment. We don't know if she's going to come back to the UK. So no. I would avoid arguing about future things which haven't happened yet.
Oh, you started it.
Well, no, you did with your rant, calling my daughter a freak, a weirdo and a traitor.
I'd never called your daughter a freak, a weirdo and a traitor. I am now calling her someone who has prioritised comfort over contributing to the... to the national interest, and that's absolutely fine.
It might be called ambition, James, and aspiration.
Well, no, it's actually, there used to be a word for it in regards to Hong Kong. Do you know that word, filth?
No, I don't know.
Failed in London, try Hong Kong.
Well, maybe she did fail in London, huh?
No, I'm just reminding you what a nastier person than me might say in the context of a conversation in which I've made it crystal clear that I wasn't talking about her, and I wish her nothing but good. And when she comes back, if she comes back, I am proud to have paid my taxes so that she and any future grandchildren can avail themselves of all the services that she's chosen not to contribute to for the best part of a decade, because that's what taxes are for, to allow those of us who think they're important to look after those of you who don't. It's 12:30 and Amelia Cox has your headlines.
The US military says four crew members have died in a crash involving a refueling plane in western Iraq. Rescue efforts are continuing to find the two others who were on board. US Defence Secretary Pete Hegseth claims their operation in the Middle East is decimating Iran's military. He also says that Washington has a plan for the Strait of Hormuz, which is still blocked. And official figures show the UK economy failed to grow in January. There had been growth of 0.1% in December. LBC weather, breezy with a mix of sunny spells, variable cloud and blustery showers, a risk of some hail and thunder this afternoon, a high of 10 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
As the government bans the pro-Iranian regime march in London this weekend,
there will therefore be a prohibition on processions in London related to Al-Quds Day.
Thousands are still expected to attend a stationary demonstration in favour of the Ayatollah. You'll hear from the convicted terrorist who plotted to blow up the British embassy in Yemen, who is standing for election in Birmingham. Plus,
we're not leaving until that job is finished, and it's going to be very fast.
I'll be joined by the former US Navy SEAL who killed Osama bin Laden.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips?
Your best bet is to head over to Bet Victor. They've got bags of offers and promotions kicking about.
Like what?
For a start, all them weekly promotions.
Oh, yeah?
There's the Loyalty Club, the Bet Victor Predictor, and in Casino, they've got the Spinners Club, which is a weekly slot thingamajig. And you can also order food to your door.
Can you?
Oh, no, hang about. That's a different app.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet at Bet Victor. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. Gambleaware.org.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Sorry to interrupt your day, but I've just been diagnosed with dementia, and I'm going to need your help. I'll need help when I can no longer button a shirt or recognise my own family. My daughter will need help too. I worry this could ruin her life. And we will all need help to find a cure to end the devastation of dementia. I can't do this alone.
It will take a society to beat dementia. Alzheimer's Society.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato.
Whoa!
And spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo!
Try Dolmio Intensify. Pasta sauces with serious flavour. Dolmio, yeah.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
It is 12.33. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. So Henry Reilly is currently stampeding down the stairs in order to bring us the very latest instalment of Reilly's Reform Round... What? A jingle? No. Well, let's wait until Henry gets here for that. I'm still keen to talk about Dubai, with the constant caveat that although everybody who has moved there for reasons of self-enrichment or aspiration or whatever you prefer to call it, is probably going to come back to the United Kingdom at some point and avail themselves of all the services that those of us who haven't moved to tax-free states have continued to pay for. So the schools that you use, the hospitals that you use, the roads that you use, the army that defends you, the navy, the police force that you'll turn to in the event that you've got any trouble. And of course, a lot of these things you will benefit from if you're only visiting, despite the fact that you were born here and have chosen not to contribute to them. I fully recognise that, that not everybody there is motivated entirely by greed. But the influencers, particularly the ones who've made much of how safe Dubai is and how unsafe London is, you didn't need to do the second bit. You could have said it's lovely here. You get locked up for taking photographs, so obviously there's not a lot of street crime. You could have just said that. You didn't have to pretend that London is some sort of hellhole or that London has particular problems compared to other cities. It's the lies about London that make you a traitor. And then, of course, you've got that other magnificent double reverse where they claim that free speech in this country is somehow under threat while living under Sharia law in a country where you'll be sent to prison for taking pictures. But you need a license to be an influencer. So do we know whether or not Isabel Oakeshott has a license to be an influencer? If you don't know who she is, she's kind of a big figure in Reform. I think she's married to Lee Anderson. What is the thing that you need to be an influencer, like a license to be an influencer? To be honest, if I was married to Lee Anderson, I'd probably move to Dubai. So don't hold that against her. Anyway, speaking of Reform, Henry Reilly's just arrived. Henry, come in, pull up a chair. It's time. Have we got a chair? Is this true?
Yeah. Better believe it.
Who's done it?
You're here.
I feel that this exchange is a little bit like something out of The Office, because I feel like David Brent now. I'm going, I don't know who you are. You're definitely not Gareth. You're probably Martin Freeman's character, aren't you?
Yeah. What's his name again?
What was his name again?
Oh, that's annoying. Oh, I can't remember.
But Dawn and... Dawn and... Well, my inbox is finished now. It'd be the next 5 minutes with people reminding me of the text of the name of Martin Freeman's character. So go on, who's done it? Are you not going to tell me who's done it? Have they done it? What?
They say.
Oh, all right, go on then.
Riley's Reform Roundup. From Paul in Clapham.
Thank you, Paul. That's one of the few we've seen.
That's just awful. Should you not have run that? But I mean, I'm going to get into trouble with management now. You can't be just playing out that sort of tut. The ferret's fine. That's contextualised. That's... Oh, Lord of butter. Thank you. Well, this is not a reverse ferret. I'm standing by my position. That had no business being played. Thank you, Pauline Clapham.
Mm.
Production value's low.
I think it'd take it a while.
Yeah? What have you got for us?
There's a few. I've got four today, if that's all right, James. Let's start with, firstly, Nigel Farage.
Tim!
Tim! Thank you.
Dan! Tim!
Yes. First one is, Nigel Farage has sparked a bit of interest in some of his comments he's made, only in the last couple of hours, actually. He has said, and you'll recall, there was a huge moment when Reform UK were the largest party on Worcestershire County Council, James, and Nigel Farage was saying it's sort of very important to win these authorities. Nigel Farage said he wishes the party hadn't bothered to take control of Worcestershire County Council because of its financial problems.
What? That's not how politics works.
They've recently approved...
I'm sure Keir Starmer wished he hadn't bothered taking control of the entire country because of the problems he inherited.
Well, he says that they've, as you know, they've recently approved a council tax rise of almost 9%.
Yeah, but hang on, that's a council tax cut.
Because it's not the maximum.
Is it the maximum?
It is the maximum, actually. Maybe 4.99%.
Because that was my favourite. That was my favourite story from... Oh, go on then. That from earlier in the week on the new feature on the James O'Brien programme. My favourite story this week from
Riley's Reform Roundup.
I thought it was you. It sounds a bit like you.
Does it?
Yeah, a little bit. I thought it was actually you, and then I was going to get really cross. Do you think it was him as well? Keith thought, and he's a professional.
Yeah.
My favourite was when he said that he was taken to task for the fact that they hadn't cut council tax, and he claimed that they had put council tax up and cut it.
Yes, so if you don't... His argument was that if you don't increase it by the maximum amount, you can increase council tax, that it's actually a cut in council tax. So they've approved a 9% rise. Just to remind you, James, that's one of the largest council tax rises in history. That's to balance the books and to avoid effective bankruptcy.
Yes.
Nigel Farage said that we didn't make it bankrupt, and then when he was asked... let me give you his full quote. He said, Worcestershire, I have to say, we took minority control of a virtually bankrupt council. I wish we hadn't bothered... And went on to say, no, we didn't win the election, we formed a coalition, and we were always on a hiding to nothing. And of course, this is referencing what you mentioned earlier on, James. There was a lot of criticism because on the Reform leaflet, it said cutting your taxes. But of course, in instances like this, Nigel Farage has, or his local authorities have increased council tax. Nigel Farage, though, says that was a national message rather than a local one.
So he doesn't want to be in control of territories that are in... difficult financial circumstances.
That would be the implication based on what
he's resigning from politics entirely then, rather than seeking to become Prime Minister of a country that he has contributed to the economic decline of more than many, many others.
His argument is that it's proving to be a stick to beat him with, whereas he would point to areas where it hasn't gone up by the maximum amount.
But it has gone up. And he pledged to cut it.
On the Reform leaflet, it said cutting your taxes.
And a lot of these leaflets had his signature on them. But it's nothing to do with him.
So he says it's nothing to do with the local election campaign.
Is this on tape? Reading it out? Because he's developed a habit of saying no several times in quick succession,
yes.
Which gives me an opportunity to play another clip from earlier this week. Not immediately, of course, because Keith needs a little bit of time to get his ducks in order, and indeed his ferrets.
There is audio of that, James, but it hasn't come through to us yet. I've been trying to ask.
No, we didn't win the election. And also, when Beth Rigby was picking him up on the leaflets earlier in the week, he said, no, wrong.
There's
no limit.
It's changed a lot this week.
Eat your heart out, Paul in Clapham.
There's another story, James. Or am I moving on?
Yeah. If you want.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Friday. Do what you want.
Malcolm Offord, he was Lord Offord. He's now not anymore. He said he's lost friends since joining Reform UK. He's their leader in Scotland.
Mm.
He was appointed the party's leader north of the border in January. He's asked about his sort of personal situation with friends. He said, yes, I've lost friends.
Yeah.
I've lost a couple of people who've said to me, we just can't support what the party stands for. I feel that is a sacrifice that I had to make.
Presumably his friends believe that the party stands for all manner of unpleasantnesses like racism, but that's a sacrifice he has to make in order to join the party that stands for the things that his former friends are repelled by.
He says also...
Oh, I feel very sorry for him. He reminds me of Lord Farquaad from Shrek.
Shrek. He said that his position has hardened on the issue of immigration.
Has hardened?
His position on immigration has hardened since he joined Reform.
Yeah, funny that, isn't it? So isn't Nassim Zahawi, and he's an immigrant. He's a refugee.
He said that some of the language Nigel Farage has used on immigration had previously made him feel uncomfortable.
Mm.
And he sparked a bit of interest yesterday. He was giving a sort of fireside chat event. Our political editor in Scotland, Gina Davidson, was there. And at one point, he suggested that the Reform UK in Scotland would abolish all quangos in Scotland. There's around 130 at the moment, but this is what he said.
Quangos? Are you going to come?
I'm not going to. There's 132 of them. I've got a spreadsheet. There's 132 of them, and there's a further 40-odd public arms length bodies that need to be looked at.
Will you tell us before the election?
We can run through any number of them. I mean, you might start by saying all of them.
You want to get rid of all of them?
And then work backwards to which ones you actually want to keep.
Now, if you abolished all of the quangos, that would obviously include Food Standards Scotland.
Yeah, get rid of it.
The Care Inspectorate.
Care, plish, mayor.
Nature Scotland.
Yeah, down with nature.
The Scottish Legal Aid Board.
Who needs legal aid? Apart from people accused of crimes they haven't... Well, everyone, really, who can't afford lawyers. Anyway, yeah, get rid of that.
Visit Scotland.
No.
National Museum Scotland.
Museums are for snowflakes.
Prisons inspectorates.
Yeah, don't need to inspect prisons. We just need to check they're still there.
Well, that would be his argument, but that's another claim by his party leader. Of course, they've got crucial elections in Scotland.
Quangos, I mean, it is almost as if everything that these people represent comes from radio phone-ins in about 1987, because quangos used to be a big thing when Labour were in power. I don't know if you're right, but you have to be 1997, wouldn't it?
Mm.
Or 2002. The Daily Mail pretended not to know what quangos were and pointed out that we've got quangos and former Labour politicians are running quangos. But of course, most quasi-autonomous non-governmental organisations are doing precisely the kind of work that you've just described. They're keeping an eye on food standards. They're keeping an eye on the care sector. They're looking after museums or nature or legal aid or tourism. But of course, if you don't know any of that, then, like Malcolm Offord, you could reasonably call for them all to be abolished.
Certainly that's what he's hinting at the moment.
On we go.
There's two more, James, both local. Nottinghamshire's Reform Group have been asked, what are you afraid of after question-dodging claims? Now, let me tell you what has happened there. Nottinghamshire County Council, there was an effort to change the way how council meetings there work. They set up a group to assess the effectiveness and see if there were changes that could streamline the decision-making process in council meetings. Grateful to a few tips I've had from the Nottinghamshire area on this. One of the proposals was to cut from 60 minutes to 45 minutes some question time in council meetings, to cut the 60-minute time for motions in half to half an hour, and reduce the time council members spend debating a meeting item. Opposition councillors have said that this is removing valuable debate.
Yeah.
Reform UK say it's more business-like and helps council get business done faster and ensure that all meeting topics get discussed. Another key element that's been criticised, and it may seem small fry,
they're banning questions, or at least reducing the amount of time available for questions.
That's the criticism.
So in Worcestershire, they don't want to be in charge because the finances are in a mess.
Mm-hmm.
Spoiler alert, welcome to Britain. And in Nottinghamshire, they don't want the other politicians to have the space they currently have to ask them questions about the things that they're doing.
That is the criticism levied by the opposition.
Sounds like Dubai.
Well, there's a supplementary question which is allowed in council meetings.
Oh, yes.
They want to... they've drawn criticism for one of the elements of the plan they supported was withdrawing that. So you can't ask any supplementary questions. Instead, you can ask for a written response. In a statement, Reform said the purpose of the proposed changes to the Constitution was to streamline full council meetings to get business done and to make council meetings more effective.
Hmm, okay.
And there's one more. This is... Oh, yeah. Sorry.
No, how many is that then?
Four today.
For five on Monday.
Eight on Monday.
Four on Tuesday.
Three by me, one by you.
Four, 12.
There was five on Wednesday.
17.
You had one, I had four.
Yeah.
And then Thursday yesterday was...
competition, mate.
No, I'm just... But yeah. Seeing as you're chipping in... Yeah. Okay. No, it wasn't.
Oh, good.
No,
yeah. 17. Thursday?
Yeah. Thursday was four.
So 21. 25 stories. All about the same party, all negative. Yeah. Some hilarious, some just tragic. Go on, what's the final one?
Well, no, I feel like I've upset you now, James, on that one.
No,
really,
I'm all right.
Yeah,
no,
you sure?
Fine. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Sorry, I'll just, okay. I'll think next time.
Oh, no, that's all right. Just, I mean, I'm beginning to think that we may have misnamed this, because it sounds as if it's all Riley, doesn't it? It sounds as if it's entirely your...
Riley's Reform Roundup.
I don't know now. Did he say something at the end?
It's from Paul in Clapham.
He says that.
Yes,
from
yeah.
Paul in Clapham. Thank you, Paul. But I'm beginning to think I've given you too much profile now on my show. I'm going to regret this when they replace me with you, aren't I? I'm going to look back and think, Riley's Reform Roundup, that's where it began. That's where the decline, that's where the coup started. No, 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 no. You're right there. You do slip. Go on, full story.
Last one. This is a peculiar one, James. So there was a...
Because the other 24 have been normal.
There was a town council by-election on Penarth Town Council that took place. Now, you had four candidates. You had Labour, Plaid Cymru, the Green Party and the Conservatives. So there was no Reform candidate in this by-election. How did Reform UK win that election then? Let me tell you.
Yeah, go on.
The Conservative...
That is actually quite a good riddle.
Yeah,
that's a good riddle, that. Yeah, it's like the kind of, if my peacock laid an egg in your garden, who would it belong to?
Yes, I've got no idea with riddles. But I'll tell you the answer to this one. The Conservative candidate defected to Reform UK a week before polling day. Now, what that meant, James, is you've got a fair few hacked-off residents that I've been in touch with, because they... I mean, some of which had voted by post for this Conservative candidate. Now, of course, they may well have voted for the candidate, but nonetheless, he's associated with the party. This is Zach Weaver. He's the former Deputy Chief of Staff to the Welsh Conservative leader. He won by 38% of the vote, or another way of phrasing it is he only beat the Green Party by 100 votes, less than 100 votes. And the sort of question from local activists there is, well, there was no Reform candidate. If people had wanted a Reform candidate, A, they could have stood one. B, it would have been on the ballot paper. And so if the Conservative Reform vote had split, then the Green Party might have a councillor. So the Greens are annoyed. The Conservatives are annoyed because their candidate won. But he's defected to Reform the day that he won the by-election.
So the ballot papers still said Conservative.
Exactly, on polling day.
So if you were voting for the party rather than the person, you've ended up with something you didn't vote for.
Yes. He would say that he did say a week before he was joining, but nonetheless, it was on the ballot paper that he was a Conservative when he was going to be a Reform councillor.
Do we know, while you're here, having, you know, great fun and hoovering up plaudits and praise galore on my show, did you do any work and find out whether or not the leader of Reform in Wales actually lives in Wales yet?
So we have... this is a tricky one, because there are various questions that we're trying to get to. Dan Thomas is the leader.
Barmouth was the popular suggestion for where he should move to, because then it goes Barnet, Bath, Barmouth.
Barnet, Bath, Barmouth.
That's nice, that.
And he was the council leader, Dan Thomas, in Barnet in North London.
Yep.
But we have not... I've not been able to sort of locate a postcode for Mr. Thomas yet.
He's still on it, though. We're still on it. So 25... Oh, Paul in Clapham's been in touch.
Has he?
Yeah, says feeling proud, and then a smiley emoji.
Please don't send any more.
Yeah. Paul, actually, Henry and I would both like to say thank you very much for that jingle, which we'll play one more time.
Riley's Reform Roundup. From Paul in Clapham.
That's the full version.
That's the full version, and probably the final time anyone's ever going to hear it. Don't you think?
Yeah, no, I think it's fair.
I don't know. Anyway, well done.
Thank you, James.
25 stories. 25 stories and Pauline Clapham. What a time to be alive.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Pete Hegseth says the only thing impeding shipping in Hormuz is Iran bombing ships. And 90% of people exempt from work have mental illness. Why?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
My name is Chevy, and this is my NHS story. Over a couple of days, I was getting quite intense pain on the left side of my stomach. So I called my doctors and then was referred to the Eltham CDC. It was literally a seamless, stress-free day. There was no anxiety or worry.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
For GCSE and A-level success, one name stands out. Justin Craig. Small, tailored group tuition that really works. Justin Craig courses consolidate knowledge, boost confidence and improve technique for mocks, assessments and exams. Available in classrooms and online. One-to-one also available. With over 40 years experience, Justin Craig has helped more than 100,000 students. For more details, visit justincraig.ac.uk. Justin Craig. Tailored for you.
Our pets in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Did you know that if you buy your train tickets early, you could get a better price with Southeastern Advance Tickets? Whether you're planning a fun family day out or heading into town for a meeting, the earlier you buy, the cheaper your ticket could be. See our terms and conditions to check if it's the right ticket for you. Buy your Advance train tickets now from the Southeastern app or website and pay no booking fees.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 991234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Saturday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Proud partner of Team GB.
It is 12:52. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I've got a real fanboy, full disclosure for you this week. I don't listen back to many of them myself. I don't think I've listened to any of them in their entirety. But I do think you can tell when I'm in full fanboy mode, can't you? And it's usually going to involve... Well, full fanboy mode is either going to involve actors that I've always admired or pop stars that I... that I was into as a youth. When I first, do you remember when you first discovered pop music? It was so incredible, so liberating. And this week's guest was one of the people at the very forefront for my generation of various genres of music, actually. Originally punk in the band Generation X. But subsequently a unique sound, actually, as a solo artist, but also one of the most iconic visual aesthetics, images, that any pop star, any rock star has ever had. Well, there's a couple of things I love about this interview. One is that it's quite squeaky. Yeah, you did. You heard me. Not like, it's a squeaky interview because of, I wish it was his trousers, because that would be even more appropriate, wouldn't it, for a rock star of this caliber. He was wearing a new-ish leather jacket. And I don't know if you'll hear it during this clip, but it was such a fresh, box-fresh leather jacket that it squeaked quite a lot. And the other bit I love about it is that my Spotify has adjusted. So I stuck on a couple of his albums to prepare for the interview, and now they're coming round randomly on my Spotify. And they're just superb, you know, Hot in the City, Eyes Without a Face, White Wedding, Rebel Yell. Have you worked out who it is yet? It's only Billy Bloody Idol. on Full Disclosure this week. And we cover a lot of ground. It's a slow start. Another thing that you might pick up on sometimes if you listen to a lot of them is that I'm not quite sure that he had the first idea who I was. Sometimes people are excited to come into Full Disclosure Studio because they're kind enough to be big fans of the show or fans of me, God forbid. Sometimes, fairly clear, don't really do it with people if they don't know why they're there. He knew why he was there because there's a brilliant new film about him coming out on Sky Arts, but it was a bit of a slow start. It took him a while to relax and to trust me, but once we'd broken through that barrier, it was an incredibly far-reaching and very moving interview, particularly this bit when quite late in his father's life he addressed a couple of things from Billy Idol's past and even made an effort for the first time to get his head around his own son's music.
There's a moment when you recall a conversation with your father, and he worries that he'd upset you by not caring enough about your music.
Yeah, he didn't really understand why would anybody want to do that? You know, isn't that? You know, that's...
Yeah.
So, but then over time, I think he saw I really stuck with it, and then towards the end of his life, when he started to get ill with the... cancer and stuff, I think he was sort of listening to my music. He liked this song Save Me Now on Kings and Queens of the Underground, and he was telling people about it and stuff, and I think he started listening to some even the Generation X stuff and started to talk to me about it.
Good Lord.
And
what was that like?
Well, it was kind of wild, really, because he'd never talked to me about my music, and I said, Dad, you're listening to Wild Youth, you know, like, you know, what... But, yeah, and then when he was really ill, then he was sort of, it was really towards, I came home to England in May of the year he was actually dying, 2014, to take care of him. One night he said to me, did I upset you that I didn't understand about your music, Will? And I said, well, Dad, you know, I was crazy to think I could do it, because there is an element about that you had to be a little nuts to think you could do it, because, you know, it's just not normal, and it's not, there's no qualifications, true qualifications for it. It's just whether you can do it or not. And so I was a little, told him, I was a little crazy to think I could do it, Dad. So, yeah, why would you understand? A little bit. And I knew at that moment he was seriously dying, you know, not sure. Well at all. That he didn't need any stick from me. Because, you know, I kind of could see why he couldn't understand, you know.
And there's lots there, whether you're a music fan or not. There's a lot of humanity there as well. And, of course, he came perilously close to dying after having a hideous motorcycle accident. And we address one of his more outlandish claims, which is that he started smoking crack cocaine to help him get off the heroin. I'm not even joking. He started smoking crack cocaine to help him get off the heroin. He has lived a life, some would say, the kind of life that rock stars don't seem to live anymore, but that would be, I don't know, probably a slightly clumsy comment. It is 12:58. That's it. Crikey, where's the show gone? Where's it gone? Where's that? That's it. It's another week over. The only thing I've forgotten to do, I think, is to reveal what happened to the bloke who played the lead in Catch 22 when we performed it at the Edinburgh Festival in either 1990 or 1991, possibly 1992. So the guy who played Yossarian was a lovely bloke called Patrick, who was the best actor in our troupe. But we had a fancy dress party halfway through the run, and Patrick came as Freddie Mercury. And I swear to you, you have never seen anything like it. He came into the room, and I think he was wearing a spandex body stocking, and he had a fake microphone stand, and it was as if Freddie Mercury was in the room with us. And so we were all, like, absolutely gobsmacked. This guy was playing Yossarian, a really layered and difficult role in a really powerful play. And off stage, we were constantly saying, do your Freddie Mercury again. Do your Freddie Mercury for us. And I kid you not, Patrick is now the lead singer of Killer Queen, the most successful Queen tribute band on the planet, who routinely plays to entire arenas full of people. And it all began that night in Edinburgh, or in London, when we were rehearsing to take the play to Edinburgh, when he came to a fancy dress party as Freddie Mercury. And that's the end of my Joseph Heller story.
If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Global Player or the LBC app. You can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. You can listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily, the best bits from my LBC show every day. Do download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4, it's Tom Swarbrick, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
I'm a bit breathless. I left it late coming down. Do you know why?
No.
I was having an indignant conversation with myself, actually, about train fares in this country.
Oh, yes.
Shall I tell you?
Yeah.
On a bit of a whim, I thought, family in Liverpool having a fancy dress party for St. Patrick's. Shall I pop up Tuesday night, come back Wednesday morning?
Are you
going
to go
fun?
As Freddie Mercury?
No, I can't say who I'm going to go as, because it's somebody real, if you see what I mean.
I do.
With all due respect to Freddie.
Of course.
Looked at the train fares. Yeah. This is including my Mrs. Brady O'Lady senior rail card.
Yeah.
Have a guess, return. One of the journeys off peak.
120 quid?
459.
Shut up.
459.
Just to go to Liverpool.
Don't make a face like that when you say the word Liverpool.
That's the joke. I know it was.
Isn't that extraordinary?
I can't believe it.
People don't believe me when I tell them the train prices on them.
No, I mean, if you booked it weeks ago, it would be a lot less.
Yeah, but we don't all live like that, do we?
No one lives like that.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. It'd be cheaper getting a helicopter.
If anyone has a helicopter.
Charter a plane.
And wants to fly me to the moon and back.
You can't charter a plane. They're all being used to fly people back to Dubai so that they don't use up all their days to avoid tax.
Anyway, that's my moan over.
Thank you very much, Sheila Fogarty. Have a lovely weekend. And she's with you for the next 3 hours.
I am, if I can last that long. At 3 today, almost all Britons on sickness benefits, exempt from finding work at all, since lockdown that is, say they have a mental health problem, according to official data. Let's dig down into why. What's happening? What have we done to people? At 2, should we throw Vladimir Putin a bone and ease sanctions on trading oil with them? Or stand full square behind Ukraine in the war Russia is waging on them? Keir Starmer isn't joining the US in easing sanctions. But straight up after the news, I'll catch my breath. And Pete Hegseth has been saying that the US will not tolerate long-term disruption of oil and other shipping in Hormuz. Here at home, Rachel Reeves and Ed Miliband are meeting oil company bosses. Can they or the US change what's happening on that strait, on that channel?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, the US Defense Secretary insists their joint military operation with Israel is decimating Iran. Pete Hegseth has been speaking to reporters at the Pentagon this afternoon.
So today, as we speak, we fly over the top of Iran and Tehran. Fighters and bombers all day picking targets as they choose. Iran has no air defenses. Iran has no air force. Iran has no navy. Their missile volume is down 90%. Their one-way attack drones yesterday, down 95%.
He also paid tribute to 4 crew members who died in a crash involving a refueling plane in western Iraq. Rescue efforts are continuing to locate the remaining 2 people on board. Mr. Hegseth says US intelligence suggests Iran's new supreme leader is wounded and likely disfigured. Meanwhile, Washington says it will loosen sanctions on other countries buying Russian oil to try to curb prices. Iran has continued to target ships in the Gulf and the Strait of Hormuz has been blocked. Separately, the Chancellor will meet fuel and energy bosses later to discuss how to tackle the soaring oil prices in the UK. A local authority has lost its legal challenge over the housing of asylum seekers at a hotel in Essex. Epping Forest District Council was appealing a decision by the High Court not to grant an injunction against it. LBC's East of England reporter Shivani Sharma has been following the case.
Epping Council failed to convince judges at the Court of Appeal that the housing of asylum seekers at the Bell Hotel was a breach of planning laws. It was this hotel, of course, which triggered widespread asylum protests in Epping and right across the country last summer after an asylum seeker who has since been deported sexually assaulted a teenage girl.
Official figures reveal the UK economy reported zero growth in January. GDP increased by 0.1% in December. And almost 50,000 drink-related items of litter, such as cans and bottles, were collected from Britain's beaches last year. Collectively, volunteers removed more than 600,000 items of rubbish, weighing more than 11,000 kilos. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 17 points at 10,335. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, breezy with a mix of sunny spells, variable cloud and blustery showers, a risk of some hail and thunder this afternoon, a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Welcome back to the Coral Fan Derby. They're all here. First up, the badgered blokes. Arms down, badges rested. Well deserved. Football fashionistas next, putting that vintage away shirt back in the wardrobe. Last out, the armchair experts. Remote in hand, ready to sit this one out. They've all called a timeout with Coral's play break tool. Oh, what a decision. From play breaks to deposit limits and more. We're here for safer gambling. Coral, we're here for it.
18 plus gambleaware.org.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there. Good afternoon to you. We have our own Chancellor and Energy Minister meeting oil company bosses this afternoon. We'll keep an eye on what may come out of that. Oil and the price of it and the transport of it was a big part of the update that's just been given by Pete Hegseth, the US Defence Secretary, and the senior, the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Dan Kane. We'll hear from him in just a second. Just a couple of little snippets from that update. On the question of where Iran's new leader is, Pete Hegseth says he's in hiding. They think he's wounded and, in his words, likely disfigured. You'll know that he hasn't been seen in public at all. A statement attached to him was put out yesterday afternoon while I was on air. He says as well, Pete Hegseth, we're shooting down and destroying what missiles they have in stock. More importantly, ensuring they have no ability to build more. He told this to assembled journalists in a Pentagon briefing. Meanwhile, the cost of oil has risen again to over $100 a barrel when three more cargo vessels were hit in the Gulf. He pointed out, Pete Hegseth, that the only reason for a slowdown, a dramatic slowdown in shipping in the Strait of Hormuz is Iranian attacks on shipping. He said America won't tolerate it, but when asked what they would do about it, he didn't quite have an answer for that and said he was focusing on what he called the kinetic activity taking place over Iran today, normally a term used for very intense military activity. This is what the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Dan Kane, said during that briefing on Iran at the Pentagon.
We've made progress, but Iran still has the capability to harm friendly forces and commercial shipping. And our work on this effort continues. But I want to make something clear. The only thing preventing commercial traffic and flow through the straits right now, which there is some through the straits, is Iran. They are the belligerents here holding the straits closed, although there is some traffic moving through there. We've made it a priority to target Iran's mine-laying enterprise, their mine layers, the naval bases and depots, in addition to the missiles that could influence the straits. And CENTCOM continues to attack those efforts. And we continue to make progress on the industrial base to include factories, weapons, warehouses that are stored in. And we will continue to do so in the coming days, especially today.
Well, Dr. Joe Michelle joins me, Professor of Economics at the Bristol Business School at the University of the West of England. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sheila.
I think we can probably assume, because of the meeting that the Chancellor and the Energy Secretary, Ed Miliband, are having with oil industry bosses today, that they're taking this extremely seriously, as you would imagine. There have been warnings from the Energy Secretary to companies not to take the mick and to price gouge and to, you know, to start profiteering from it. So that's one aspect. What else should they be looking at? Because we're quite reliant on A, what Iran does, and B, how America responds to what Iran does, really, aren't we?
Yes, the fact that they are having these meetings, the fact that we had the G7 meeting last week to talk about releasing strategic reserves, all, I think, indicates the fact that this is being taken increasingly seriously by policymakers at the top level, as it rightly should be. This is the largest oil shock in history, in the words of the International Energy Agency. Now, we are less reliant on fossil fuels than we were in many European countries, so that does mitigate the impact somewhat. But it's clear that this does have the potential to be an extremely severe economic crisis, comparable to what we saw at the end of the COVID pandemic, the